download Chicago comedian turned sitcom star Lil Rel Howery, live music from singer-songwriter Trevor Sensor, and sports with WGN Radio's Sam Panayotovich. And now here's your host, a man who may have overdone it on the cologne today, Justin Kaufman.
I thought, where did he get this stuff? It's Axe body spray. You're supposed to put it everywhere, like for 30 seconds. Right? I took a bath in it. No, that's ridiculous. I don't wear cologne. I'm more au natural, right? I was thinking, though, you know, maybe that would make me seem like more, I guess, attractive to the millennials if I went all Axe body spray. Like if it was just like nonstop, like all, I just smelled like it was a, like I was in the club all the time.
From what I learn on commercials, that seems the way
that's
to
the
go.
Way it works.
Yeah.
No, I, you know, I'm the guy who has like five deodorants in his medicine cabinet because they're all close to the end. And I refuse to throw them out. You know what I mean?
There's like, always a little more.
Yeah,
that
there's
you can
not
grab
like
no.
Nah, you know, I'm already spending too much at $3 or whatever it is for this deodorant stick. I'm getting everything I possibly can. Like when you maybe take your fingernail. Have you ever done that? Take your fingernail out and to get as much as you can out of that,
no,
and then just kind of like
trick.
Rub it on your armpit. That's a real good trick. Real good trick.
I'm having a deodorant crisis in the house. I've been working out a lot doing this stupid Orange Theory thing, and I feel that I'm like sweating, like always sweating. I'm sweating like my shirts reek.
Uh-oh.
And then I feel like I stink.
Well, I've never smelled you. Like, I mean, in that kind of way. Like, I've never been like, oh my, and we sit next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, jeez. Zimmerman, oh.
Oh, good. Well, that,
so
that makes
good,
me feel better.
Right? But I don't know if I'm the, you know, I'm not that close to you.
Because I use hippie deodorant. You know, the Toms of Maine stuff and things like that. You know,
right.
But that doesn't, it never, it's like putting a tree bark on right. Under your arm. So I think I have to finally grow up.
You got to grow up and get a degree.
Yeah, or Old Spice or something.
Right. Welcome to the download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Sorry about the rain. It's kind of a bummer. But that's okay because we have a good show for you tonight. If you're stuck on the expressway trying to get home because of this rain, we got you covered tonight. Tremendous show. We will start tonight. We'll talk about Alder Tracks having their one-year anniversary party over at the University Club. We're going to talk with Mike Fouché and a couple of his guests. He's doing a panel over at the University Club. You can hear that at WGNradio.com. We're going to talk about what Chicago might look like politically in 2019. Obviously, 2019 is a big year when it comes to the reelection of Mayor Emanuel. Will he be here? Will he have moved on? What will city council look like? Some of the other races that are involved. Alder Tracks talking about that right now, and we'll catch up with that panel discussion after 7:30. Also, big day in Springfield. So finally, a little bit of movement, but as our old buddy Yogi Berra once said, it's deja vu all over again. Didn't he say that? Did he say that? Or was it Bon Jovi? I can't remember. Anyway, the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan, has proposed a budget that essentially is unbalanced. The governor's office says that it's $7 billion out of whack. This, of course, is the same sort of merry-go-round that we've seen in Springfield for the last year and a half, where Democrats will suggest an unbalanced budget, saying that you need to fill it with tax revenue. And Governor Rauner says, I won't accept that. Until you make changes, reforms in my turnaround agenda. So here we go again. Now, we'll see what that means. We're going to talk with Representative Ron Sandak a little bit later in the program. He was part of a bipartisan committee that was sort of trying to bridge the gap in the House to bring together some compromise on what the Republicans and the Democrats want to be able to get this budget stalemate taken care of before the spring session closes. But Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan, just said, no, I got my own. So we'll see how that's going to play out. Coming up at the big table tonight, I'm very excited for this Lil Rel. Lil Rel Howery. Lil Rel is a stand-up comedian here in Chicago who has made it big. He's on the Carmichael Show now. His special was on Comedy Central, a one-hour special that's now on Netflix. It's out this month. Lil Rel was a mainstay. He was a rock star at Jokes and Notes here in Chicago on Southside. He'd host an open mic on Wednesday nights that, like, the Chicago Bulls would come to. You know, it'd be like Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson coming through. He really was sort of the perfect story of a comic in Chicago that sort of got, you know, to the point where he was just too big for the town almost, and he went to L.A. and he's having success. We'll talk with Lil Rel about coming from the west side of Chicago all the way to the Sunset Strip. So we'll talk with Lil Rel coming up at 8 o'clock. Also tonight, Punk Folk with Trevor Sensor. Trevor Sensor is a kid from, where was it? He's right outside of Dixon, Illinois. What was the town that he's from? Do you remember?
Sterling?
Sterling, right. Sterling, Illinois. And he actually was in an Iowa bar, and he was discovered. He was playing acoustic in the back of the bar, and he was discovered by the guitar player for the Killers. How about that for strange? Because I guess that's the town in Iowa they were from. That's where the guitar player was from. And he's like, well, this is great. And so Trevor Sensor has been signed to a record label. He's working around the country doing international stuff. He's playing his acoustic guitar, and he's going to perform live for us tonight here in studio. Also, Sam Panjanovic on this Joakim Noah mess. Ay, ay, ay. And Brittany are back, our interns. We'll take a break here. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Production with Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download. We'll get to the carryout in just a sec. Let's take a break here on 720 WGN. All right, it's time for the carryout here on The Download. Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. ABC7 anchor Ron Majors retires tonight after the 10 o'clock broadcast. Majors, he's pretty amazing. To be on top at two different television stations and somehow continue to maintain respect in the business of TV news is pretty damn impressive. Ron Majors is Chicago news, and it's going to be weird not having him on our televisions. I think now that he's leaving, maybe we can just get rid of the 10 o'clock news altogether. Like, that would be the ultimate tribute. No one could do it like you, Ron, so let's run reruns of Maury. And now it's time for the Download Springfield Report. Lots to talk about tonight. Ton getting done. Not a lot getting done? Nothing? What about the Democrats floating a new budget proposal that is unbalanced by about $7 billion? Just like last year? Okay. Marijuana? No? It's going to get vetoed? How about pumpkins? Did we take care of pumpkins? Oh, that is already done. Huh. Well, as Shakespeare said, it's all the same. Only the names have changed. Wait, was that Shakespeare or Bon Jovi? Can't remember. Anyway, that was a Download Springfield Report. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan was said to be ready to endorse Donald Trump today for president, but he backed off saying he wanted to focus on a job in Congress instead. Really? Wow, that's a first. I love that the highest-ranking Republican in the land has to, quote, think it over when doling out an endorsement for a GOP candidate for president. And that, as the media, we act like it's news. Who's he going to endorse? Oh, is it going to be the Republican candidate? Or maybe it's the flat tax dude. What was that guy's name? I could see his face, pudgy face, and the glasses that fit. We got a flat tax. We're going to do it. He looked like a younger Mitch McConnell. Steve Forbes. What, is he going to endorse Steve Forbes? Come on. The State Department came out today and said that Hillary Clinton did use personal emails to conduct official business. No indictment likely, but she will have her reply all and BCC privileges revoked. And she will not have a spam folder. Spam is going to go right to her general inbox. She's going to have to read every single one. That should be enough punishment. 11 states have sued the federal government over the new bathroom rules that say transgendered people can use the bathroom they identify with. The states are like, no way. That's way too freaky for us. We just got used to the idea of using chips instead of swiping our credit cards. Now this, the 11 states are saying the federal government can't tell them what to do. Only they could tell people what to do. Okay. Protesters are in Oak Brook at McDonald's headquarters to advocate for raising the minimum wage. An ex-McDonald's CEO said raising the minimum wage would force the company to replace workers with robots. So I think the word you're looking for, sir, is vending machine. We've all seen Idiocracy, right? Imagine trying to change the Happy Meal toy now. Can I get the dinosaur instead of the fish toy? We already got the fish toy. I don't know what you mean. Does not compute. Reboot. Nuggets. More nuggets. Then it blows up. In weather, thunderstorms, terrible thunderstorms. Always a nice way to celebrate the midweek here. In sports, well, the first shoe to drop looks to be Joakim Noah. Sun-Times is reporting that Noah has told Bulls teammates he will not be back with the squad. Not surprising, since he really didn't gel with Coach Hoiberg, and he is a free agent. Where will he end up? If my gut's right, the Timberwolves team is going to be sick. The Cubs take 2 of 3 from the Cardinals. Big series and a big series win on the road. The Cubs have done a good job against their main rivals, the Pirates and the Cardinals. Arrieta won his 9th game. Holla! The Sox, on the other hand, just lost 3 of 4 from the Indians and went 3-7 on their 10-game homestand. What? They currently have a half-game lead on the Indians. That's not good. But the bright side, they're still in first at Memorial Day weekend. And frankly, that means at least significant baseball into June. Maybe July? We'll take it. The Golden State Warriors are down 3-1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are just ruining this basketball season for everybody. First, they knock off the Spurs, preventing us from a Spurs-Warriors showdown, and now they're taking the best team that ever lived to the brink? Also, side note, I wish we could go back in time and slap SportsCenter's face for even asking the question if this Warriors team is as good as the 96 Bulls. Down 3-1 to the Oklahoma City Thunder? I said good day. Cavs-Raptors go tonight. I'd love a Thunder-Raptors finals. Then maybe the NBA will wise up and start giving D-Rose a couple foul calls when he drives a lane. Because if you don't, you get a finals in Toronto and Oklahoma City. Good luck with that. And finally, today is National Wine Day, or as millions of Americans call it, Wednesday. Well, that's the carryout for May 25th, 2016. Hey, we packed your order really tight, so when you get home, you'll realize we forgot half of it. More to come tonight on The Download. Oof, man, Springfield heating up right now as the Democrat-only budget, Democrats are the only ones to vote on it, passed with 63 yes votes to GOP protests. We'll talk about that with Representative Ron Sandak coming up after the news here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Wow, what a night in Springfield, Illinois, as the Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan, introduces a budget proposal to the House, a budget proposal that kind of came out of left field because there was a bipartisan committee, including both sides of the aisle, working on how they were going to work up a new compromise. Speaker of the House goes ahead, puts an unbalanced budget forward. The governor's office says it's about $7 billion out of whack. A 500-page budget that had 1 hour of debate, and Speaker Madigan called it, and they voted full party. So the Democrats voted across the board. One abstain. I'm probably guessing it's Ken Duncan. I don't know who voted for what yet, but we'll reach out. There's a lot going on because there was shouting and the GOP protests. There was some slamming of some chairs. I've been following it on Twitter. We'll get Representative Ron Sandak, who was in heated conversation with Liu Lang. So we'll have a conversation about it coming up. But first, you know what? AlderTrack is having their anniversary party right now at the University Club. It's been streaming all night here on WGNRadio.com. Two panels. They were doing one on Is Chicago Shrinking? And then the one that they are currently doing, Chicago Politics 2019. What is this city going to look like? You got Greg Goldner, Brian Sleet, and Victor Reyes, all sort of moderated by Mike Fouché from AlderTrack.com, who joins us regularly. Let's go out to the University Club. Mike Fouché, are you there, my friend?
Yes, I'm here, Justin.
All right.
Great to be here. And we're just finishing up our discussion. And one of the things that we're talking about that's really interesting with Victor, Greg, and Brian, we were talking about who some of the potential dark horse candidates are that could run for mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we heard Lisa Madigan was one name. Anybody else want to just toss out a name real quick?
Victor, so I will tell you that Bridget Gaynor, Sheriff Dart, not a candidate or maybe a candidate, but you cannot underestimate President Preckwinkle's influence on who the next mayor is going to be in the city of Chicago.
Hey, Mike, let me ask a question to you and to the panel. the how much will we see of a more progressive candidate like we did with Chuy García running again? Will we see that movement get stronger as we get to 2019, or should we expect a more moderate mainstream Democrat to run for mayor if Mayor Emanuel does not?
So this is Brian, and I was saying, like, looking at the Fox campaign, I think there is a strong opportunity for a black person who can earn some progressive credentials. And so, you know, whether that is Alderman Sawyer of the 6th Ward or Kurt Summers or even potentially, Larry Rogers or Kwame Raoul, there is a strong opportunity for a black candidate with progressive credentials to have a chance at mayor if issues stay as is.
What about you guys? Is there a progressive candidate possibility there?
Well, I mean, certainly you're going to see not one or two, but you're going to see many candidates run. If Rahm Emanuel is not running for re-election, you're going to see a wide open race, and we're likely not to have the 50% threshold met in the first round, which means not who's progressive necessarily or not, but who are the top two candidates mm-hmm. that get to a runoff. You could have a situation where both are progressive and very similar in terms of their point of view that get to a runoff, or those that are more divergent. But you're not going to have a progressive candidate that unites the party, not likely.
Let me ask a question, if I can, Mike. Just the I'm fascinated by the idea, and we've been hearing it over and over, that if Hillary Clinton does win the White House, that Rahm Emanuel could find a spot in the White House, almost like a parachute to get out of his situation in Chicago. Is that just sort of water cooler talk, or is that something that realistically could happen?
Let's have two guys that actually know him. Greg ran his 2002 campaign for Congress. Greg, what do you think about that?
You know, Rahm served as President Obama's White House Chief of Staff, which is a pretty powerful, important position for President Obama. Whether or not federal service is attractive to him or not at this point of his career, I wouldn't say that would be a driving ambition. Being White House Chief of Staff is a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think, you know, if you were to go through a confirmation process, it would be tough. I mean, there are a lot of issues that were raised that would kind of haunt him. When you see Washington, they're happy to go into all kinds of issues. So I just think that he'd have to take a step back and decide what he really wants. But, you know, he's achieved a lot in Washington, being in leadership after a few years in the House and then being in the White House side. I'm not sure that that's a driving force for him.
For you guys, I mean, if I can, we only have just a little bit of time here, and I wanted to ask about Springfield, just make a transition real quick. The Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan, just passed a budget out of the House that was unbalanced, according to the governor's office, $7 billion. Greg, Victor, I know you guys spend time in Springfield. Is it surprising to see that the Speaker of the House sort of made this move and passed something through that wasn't really a compromise and sort of, you know, went at Governor Rauner like this?
No, it's not surprising. In fact, I assume it's intentional, right? They want to put it in front of the governor, challenge him to veto it, which I assume he will, and it'll just set the stage for November.
Greg?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think they've kind of decided that they want the voters to decide which direction the state should take and make a choice between the two. Unfortunately, I don't know that we're going to have that kind of clarity coming out of November. So if we wait until November, what really has changed and what would be new or what would be different to come to a different solution?
So Tuesday, May 31st is the deadline for this session. Are we going to get a budget out by then?
I think we just did.
And that's it?
I assume the Senate still has to pass it, but
right.
I think that's the budget.
This is it. There's not going to be something else. So whether Rauner votes up or votes or vetoes it or signs it, this is what he's going to have to deal with.
Okay.
Go ahead. Unless the governor wants to drop his turnaround agenda, you'd have to ask Greg about that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you got it there, Justin. That's
right.
The answer.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks to Mike Fouché, Greg Goldner, Brian Sleet, Victor Reyes, the people who are at the University Club as part of the AlderTrack one-year anniversary party panels that they did. Is Chicago Shrinking and Chicago Politics? What to expect in 2019? Mike checks in with us regularly every Wednesday. Coming up, we're going to take a break. Representative Ron Sandak is going to join us to talk about what happened in the House today. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We're waiting for Representative Ron Sandak to give us a ring, if he's not too busy throwing chairs. Man, I can't believe it, Pete.
It's getting testy.
So, okay, so from a story standpoint, like just telling a story around a campfire, for a year and a half, we have had this fight, an ideological fight between a Republican governor and a Democrat Speaker of the House, where the Democrat Speaker of the House says, this is the budget, it needs more revenue, so we need a tax increase that will generate the revenue, $7 billion or so. The governor said, I'll give you that if you curb the power of unions and make changes to make this a more business-friendly state for my business friends. Okay, that's not going to work. All that is not. A year and a half of this, Pete.
Yeah.
It has played out, and we've seen social service agencies and other parts of the state of Illinois be frustrated and affected by this. Lutheran Social Services was on here, losing employees and having to cut staff. Chicago State University, Northeastern Illinois University, all of those places, and many more. I'm not even mentioning all. Affected by the fact that we couldn't come together. So this spring session, this was going to be different. You had a bipartisan committee coming together, House members saying, all right, let's work it out. What can we do? Maybe a little bit of compromise here, a little bit of compromise there. I compromise with everybody, says the governor. And the Speaker of the House is saying, you know what? This is a sham. So he decides, I'm going to do my own budget. I'm not even going to tell anybody about it. Here it is. It's $7 billion out of whack. You know what? Deal with it. Here's the 500 pages. Whomp. It's on your desk. We got about an hour. Oh, sorry, 55 minutes. Somebody talked for about 25 minutes. All right, are we about there? Good. Vote. You all vote with me. Great. It's in. See ya. Yeah. And now we're at a point where the Republicans in the House are furious because it's just politics as usual. The Senate will probably pass this bill because it's a Senate. It's a Democrat-controlled Senate. And it's going to go to Governor Rauner, and he's going to say veto, and it's going to come back to the House, and they won't be able to get the supermajority, and here we go. Wow. All of that posturing, all of that theatrics, all of that C word, the compromise, and we're back to where we started back in, what, May of last year? If not months before, if not the year before, if not the year before that. As Rob Martier said, Illinois is the only state in the union that does not have a budget blueprint. Now, the Democrats will argue and say, we did our job. We gave you a budget. There it is. It's up to you as a governor to figure out how to get that revenue. Seven bill. We got an idea. Raise the income tax. It was working before. Why did you take it away? And the Republicans say, no, we need compromise. We don't want the income tax. We want friendlier, friendlier rules and regulations, laws, and a climate for businesses so we can be competitive in this country. I mean, it's the ultimate fight in politics today. And instead of the two coming together, they're just bashing each other in the head with a bat. And that's what's happening now. We want to get Representative Ron Sandak on the line. He was involved in all of this. I don't know if we got time. I know he's going to call in just a second here. Wow. Amazing. Maybe we can get him. Maybe we can figure out how to get him in because Lil Rel's coming up next. But I really want to talk with Representative Sandak. Maybe we can talk with him a little bit later, because if I put him on now, we got to get to the news in 2 minutes. It's not worth it, right? So maybe we can figure out a way to put him on a little bit later in the show when we can have a little perspective before he goes to bed. How about that? crazy day in Springfield, and I'm glad that at least something's happening, even though just all seems to be the same. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at the big table, we're going to talk with Lil Rel Howery, great Chicago stand-up comedian who's now in Hollywood. He's starring on The Carmichael Show. He's also got a stand-up special that's on Comedy Central that has just hit Netflix. That's where I watched it. It was on May. It's like one of the big new attractions for Netflix, Lil Rel. It's a great stand-up routine. Right now, before we get there, we'll take a little bit more time to talk about what just happened in Springfield. Joining us on the line is Representative Ron Sandek. He's a Republican from Downers Grove. Representative Sandek, let's talk about this. This was a surprise to you and your colleagues in Springfield.
Well, yeah, Justin, and good evening. There were a few surprises, none of which were good ones.
So the way I understood it is there were working groups, bipartisan working groups, that were working together to find compromise in a budget for a 2016-2017. Is that right?
Yeah, and I was in one of those groups. So there was, in fact, one of the meetings was supposed to be going on right now.
And so what happened was the Speaker of the House just said, you know what, I've got my own budget. Here it is, everybody. Everybody back to the let's get everybody back in chambers. We're going to vote on this in an hour.
Right. So this is how, I mean, I don't know his motivation, but at 4:52-ish, a 500-page budget bill was filed, and we waited an hour, which is the rules, and then they went straight to the floor, so there was no, really, it wasn't any time to really read 500 pages of budget,
right,
you know, of a budget bill. And I even asked Representative Barbara Flynn Curry if she had read it, and she danced around that question, and I kind of rhetorically asked if anyone dares admit that after an hour and a half, if they could possibly digest a 500-page budget bill. Of course, resounding, you know, silence. But we were on a path, Justin, towards maybe working towards a cooperative end and an agreed budget bill with some cuts, some revenue, and some reforms. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing this for a few months. Rank and file members, Republicans, Democrats, senators, and House members. And these meetings were productive and they were getting somewhere. And yes, time's running out. We got to have a conclusion to this session by May 31st. But to drop a surprise $40 billion spending plan on us with 2 hours notice, and by the way, the state is projected to bring in $33 billion in revenue. So it's 7.2, give or take, out of balance. We have 7.6, give or take, in unpaid bills right now. This proposal would double the unpaid bills and deficit. And we're supposed to all of a sudden absorb this and vote on it in 2 hours. It was a complete mockery of democracy and good process, and an abuse by the Democrats in charge of Springfield of their powers. It's just wrong.
Was the Speaker, did you at all have any wind that the Speaker was working on his own proposal, that there would be something like this coming down the pipeline? And
there was a rumor last night dropped in Capitol Facts that he might go it alone. Of course, he didn't verify that, share the paperwork, and we got the paperwork when it was filed.
Right.
About a couple hours ago.
I mean, we'll hear more about this when there's press conferences and all that kind of stuff. When the budget was voted upon, you know, Twitter right. sort of erupted with this. You know, there were shouts. There were chairs were being thrown around.
Wasn't that bad?
What was it like?
Physical violence and no demonstrable evidence of unruly behavior, but there was yelling and screaming, and there was shock because we had requested two things. You know, we wanted a full debate. And then one of the Democrats that kind of, you know, always toadied to Madigan made a motion to call the question, which ends abruptly debate. Mm-hmm. That is a matter that requires a roll call vote. But instead of doing that, they went right to the roll call on the budget itself and ran out of there, gaveled out, even though we had asked for a verification of the vote, which I think means, Justin, that, and we're going to file a formal protest, that it's an illegal, illicit vote that will have to be redone, because I think it's for not legally.
Well, I mean, a lot of this is, I mean, from up here in Chicago in this seat that I sit in every night, I mean, this is just political theater. There's no way a budget that's unbalanced in any form is going, even if Senator Cullerton and the Senate passes it, which they probably will, the governor's not going to sign on. Barbara Flynn Curry, I saw this on Twitter as well. She was talking to Paris over at WTTW just about the idea that this is really an insurance policy just in case we don't come to that compromise.
I don't think anyone believes that, last of all, Barbara Flynn Curry. Look, it may be political theater to those who, you know, wield the gavel. And to be sure, Justin, these are the same folks that for the last 12 years have crammed down budgets that have been out of balance. They haven't had a balanced budget when they had one-party rule when Blagojevich or Quinn was governor. And that's why we are where we are. What we have is a mess that's, you know, decades in the making. And, you know, what we thought we were doing over the last couple of weeks was trying to change the trajectory of the state. And we have been, God, I can't tell you how many meetings I have been just in, Justin, where we are bending over backwards and being collegial, cooperative. We're negotiating every nitpicky point that anyone wants to negotiate, trying to come to a, you know, escape plan, if you will, that makes sense, that turns the state's financial fortunes around. We are in a spiral, you know, a death wall, if you will. Mm-hmm. And these guys just did the same old thing today. It makes no sense to try and spend $7 billion you don't have.
Yeah. And I mean, what about the concept of Governor Rauner taking this budget, the budget that is presented to him that was out of balance with $7 billion in missing revenue, and line item vetoing, balancing it,
well,
changing it around?
That's exactly what Madigan and Cullerton want. So think about that for a second. It was $4 billion out of budget in proposed 2016. That's what the legislature is supposed to do. We're supposed to match revenues with spending,
right,
kind of identify our spending plan and our priorities. But to ask one person to line item out a full 20 to 25% of the budget is just a political expediency that they don't want to take responsibility for their actions.
Yeah, it's a hot potato.
And by the way, Justin, yeah, it is a hot potato. They don't want to fund their budget either, because what they want at the end is a partisan budget, theirs, with bipartisan tax increase, because they want us to fund their gig. Well, we have said we need to be at the table, we need to negotiate everything, and that means reforms too. And that is anathema to them.
Well, we usually wait till the end of the session for fireworks, so it's nice to get it on Wednesday instead
of
Friday or
Saturday.
Yeah, hang
on. We might have a few more days.
Yeah, I was going to say, what should we expect for the next couple days? I mean, is this going to move fast through the Senate and then get to the governor's desk for veto? I mean, what do you expect?
Oh, yeah. The governor's going to veto this. He already gave kind of a pre-veto warning. I believe he should. If they try and run out of town and say they've done their work, I think he should call us right back.
Yeah.
Because this is just, I mean, it's embarrassing. And it's what I can't figure out is what their game plan is. They're the majority party. Either do what you're going to do or include us and compromise. But you can't have it both ways. So I'm hoping after, you know, the dust settles, because I'm not really in a conciliatory mood with them right now, but I will be tomorrow. I'll be ready to go right back at it, get back to the working groups, negotiate, compromise, and be available for them. But I'm going to expect some good faith in return, because they haven't exhibited it today.
Representative Ron Sandak, Republican from Downers Grove. Get some sleep tonight, and good luck with everything tomorrow. We appreciate you checking in.
Thanks, Justin. Take care.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a star when it comes to the Chicago stand-up scene, even though he's now in Hollywood. Lil Rel Howery is from the west side of Chicago. He had a wildly popular open mic night at Jokes and Notes every Wednesday, and he even recorded his Comedy Central special right here at the Vic on Sheffield. Lil Rel has seen huge success this year due to his role on the NBC show The Carmichael Show and the Comedy Central stand-up special Relevance, which was just put on Netflix this month. It's great to have Lil Rel in studio tonight as my guest on The Download. Lil Rel, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
What up, man?
I'm a huge fan.
That was a great intro.
It's the least I could do for you.
Just smiling over here like, oh, that is me.
I mean, you're a kid from the west side of Chicago. You know, what got you into stand-up comedy?
I love comedy. I was a huge comedy fan as a kid. I was one of those awkward kids that watched SNL at 10. You know what I mean? It's sketches I shouldn't have understood, but, you know, being a big and Living Color fan and the Wayans family and Robert Townsend, you know, Partners in Crime, like all his specials with HBO. Like, I remember watching a show called Quick Wits. They used to come on at the SNL.
Right. Yeah, right. It was on,
ain't that
right,
crazy?
It was in the NBC Tower behind her. Yeah.
Wayne Brady was on that show.
Yeah, really?
I was supposed to have been asleep because we had church in the morning. So I was up watching random I don't even know if anybody else ever saw Quick Wits.
I remember it.
It was on for a while.
Yeah.
It was one of the best improv shows. I never knew they shot that in Chicago until you just said that. Yeah,
they did. It was a lot of improvisers from Second City, things like that. So, yeah.
That show, and then Louis Anderson had a stand-up show that used to come on real late, too. And I guess NBC, I always been an NBC head, but which I ended up seeing like all these comedians I look up to. I mean, like Louis C.K. was first. Like, it's kind of weird, man. Like, I've been a comedy student for a very long time, so it was inevitable that I did it.
What made you go into stand-up comedy instead of, like, improv or sketch comedy, what's known for here in Chicago?
Well, to me, first of all, the way my brain worked as a kid, I thought all of it was one thing anyway. I didn't know it was a category for it. I thought comedy was just comedy, so... Right. You know, you had to know how to improv, you had to do sketch, you had to act, you had to write, you had to do all that. So I thought it was all one thing anyway. So, I mean, stand-up, it was easier to start just because I remember the Sun-Times used to have the weekend paper on Friday. So they had a list of comedy clubs. So I was looking at that.
Like for open mics and
yeah, I was
like that,
reading
right?
a list of clubs before I was old enough to go to them. So I knew where to go.
Well, I read a story about you at Crane High School at your senior year deciding to write some stuff and put it up in front of an audience. Talk about that experience, because that was really the first time that you got in front of your peers, your audience. Yeah,
it was great. I mean, it was Mr. Washington, shout out to him, who, you know, was in charge of the theater department. And, you know, he was working on the play. He was like, well, you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. He said, you could write your own scenes and jokes and lines and stuff. So I remember the first line I wrote and it hit. It was like, oh, that's what that feels like. You know what I mean? So it was, I guess one of those things you never forget. I was addicted after that. I knew that roar of laughter from a big crowd and just that feeling of it. It was like, okay, I always want to feel this for the rest of my life.
What was the stand-up scene like in the 90s? I mean, to think about, you know, early 2000s, what was it like? What were the clubs that were available for you to play at?
I mean, in the beginning, I was just doing an open mic. So, like, sometimes it's almost hard to count the first few years of whatever, because you're not doing it full time. You're kind of playing with it. You know, I was doing it every few weeks when I had my day off at the little customer service center I worked at. But by the time I really started getting into it, you know, it was clubs like Riddle's Comedy Club that D-Ray used to do Sunday nights there. That place, and Damon Wynn. So Damon Wynn's spot is where I met D-Ray at. Damon used to do a club called Entis, which is... It ended up being a comedy bar later on. It changed. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know if it's still there. I think it's next to Al's Beef.
Yeah.
That's exactly. That's on Ontario. It used to be called Entis.
They've turned that over
so
ten
many times. Yeah.
Yeah, but it might still be a comedy club, but every year it seems
it's
like
a new place.
Different. Yeah.
So Damon used to have a great spot there. I wasn't even really old enough to get in, so I got there really early when the janitor was setting up the chairs. So it looked like I worked there, so nobody carded me. So usually, you know, you help out, you good. Like, I'm the help, brother, you know. And so
just moving the chair a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, right?
I remember him looking at me. I don't remember hiring nobody else. What? Put that over there. And I stayed there till the show started, wrote my name on the list. And that was actually the first time I actually caught it for real. Like, caught it. It was being mean. I guess I bummed, but it wasn't that bad, the material. But what was the problem was I ended up doing a joke that Damon did on Comic View. And that was the first lesson I learned, that you had to, like, reprogram your brain, right? You watch all these comedy shows and you forget that ain't your joke. You know what I mean?
Obviously out in Hollywood, that's a serious issue,
right? Well, they don't care. They steal all the time out there. But here, that don't happen.
It's more of an issue here than
Chicago
it is there.
Don't play that.
Really?
So I didn't know it. And I remember Damon pulling me to the side, a couple comedians. Now, I had to reanalyze everything. Let me make sure I didn't watch a bunch of stuff and I wrote stuff down thinking it was my idea, but it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? And that's when DJ Dollar Bill, I was bumming, and that's when that Wyclef Jean song, Someone Please Count 911, was popular. And they started playing it while I was on stage. Oh, God.
What was he feeling after that? I mean, bombing on stage.
I was in shock. I was like, I remember just sitting in the crowd smiling like it had happened, like a maniac, but I wanted to cry.
Well, there's a Chicago aesthetic that'll say that, you know, it's not falling down, it's how you pick yourself up.
But this is
so
the crazy part. So the night over with, and it was actually the first night me and my boy were supposed to go to our first strip club, me and my homie. So he picked me up, had to get off work. That's all true. And I'm waiting on him because, you know, I'm waiting outside. Everybody's gone. I'm out there by myself. It's snowing a little bit. And Damon is dead. This is after he done roasted me, they didn't play Someone Please Come Now. He's like, man, get in the car. Now it was awkward for both of us to look like, you just talked about me and how terrible I was. Now you got to motivate me. It felt like he was forced to go, look, hey, man, just keep trying. You know? I remember sitting there like, man, don't say nothing. You don't mean that. You know what I mean? But what it was, I went home, I listened to it because I recorded it. Like, my little brother listened to it. He was cracking it like, man, it sounded like that. Yo, he was like, he was about to cry, fam, you know. I took out my joke, my material book, and just rewrote everything. Came back the next week and killed. And it was all me just talking about being a nerd.
Was that the motivation? You got home, you said, I'm not gonna go out like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, and I saw the other comics. Everybody was so original and had their own voice. It was at that when I first started in Chicago comedy, it was so strong. It was like crazy. You had to be really. I was sitting there like, this is gonna be. I don't belong here. You know what I mean? Like what I got.
Who were we talking? Damon Williams, of course.
Damon Williams, Corey Holcomb, Deion Cole, B. Cole, Marcus Combs, Jeff B. And this is all in the same night. Everybody went up. J.D., D-Ray Davis. It was, yeah. And it's funny, that was I remember ripping the next week and Corey Holcomb going on stage saying, yo, you know, he said on the mic, yo, he going to be straight. Shorty going to be all right, man. I'm like, you wasn't here a week ago, brother.
That's great. Lil Rel in studio. Of course, he stars in the show, The Carmichael Show, which is on NBC, just wrapped up. And also, he's got his Comedy Central stand-up special, Relevance, which is now on Netflix. We'll take a quick break. More with Lil Rel here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio with me, Lil Rel, stand-up comedian. I guess you're past just being called a stand-up. I mean, now you're a star on NBC.
Yeah.
Your stand-up special is on Netflix just this month. But one of the things about the names we were talking about in Chicago, the people who at one point were telling you, get your stuff together, you know, and then turn it around and supporting you and motivating you. You know, talk about what it means for you to be a Chicago comedian, to have a group ahead of you, a group behind you.
Yeah.
You know, what it means to be a Chicago comedian.
It means a lot. I mean, it's something about our voices here, man. Like, you look at Bernie Mac, right? And, like, now, and it's not like that, but because it sometimes makes me uncomfortable, but I get comparisons to him.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily because I sound like him or anything. It's just a strong opinion I have about certain things. It's just it's a presence we have on stage.
It's authentic, yeah. And it's a realness. You're talking about things, yeah, that are in your life, not sort of like, and dating's hard, you know, doing that kind of thing. So there is this connection. You think that's what people
I know that's
see
what it is
about Chicago.
It's and Bernie is a great example because I think he is the blueprint of what a Chicago comic is supposed to be, right? And then you had guys like Deion. I came up under and D-Ray. Everybody had their own voice. You know, Deion had this, you know, original way of delivering everything. And it was funny. He always been a great writer, but probably didn't even know it yet until, you know, he got Conan. Like, oh, I am a dope writer. But he was a genius.
Deion Cole, yeah.
Deion Cole, like, gave me tags to stuff that I even did on Relevant. It was a tag to a bit about my glasses I ain't did. That was one of my first real bits about, you know, my getting my glasses stole or whatever. I had to come and tell my mama. And Deion gave me the conversation between my mom. He's like, yo, you need to milk that, yo. Like, yo, she'd be like, where they at? You know, and it was like, all right.
Is that, I mean, you toured the country and you play, you do stand-up in Hollywood. Is that normal for stand-ups to say, hey, let me help you with your joke. Let me write. Let me try to edit
they,
with you.
They only do that if they like you. Like, and because it happens to me all the time. And then I do it, too, to be honest with you. Like, if I'm really a fan of somebody and I got a tag, a good comic or a dope comic will give it to that comic. Now, a terrible comic will not tell you the tag, just take your joke and add their version of it to it.
Oh, man. Is it cutthroat like that? I mean, there's so many comics in LA.
It's very cutthroat. It's cutthroat because everybody got the same dream. You know what I'm saying? Which is why I don't get mad about it. We all got the same dream and want to be this and that. So at 10, you get kind of thirsty, man. And I can understand. I'm not that type of dude. And most of my comedic friends are not, you know what I'm saying? But I get it, though. So I'm not as mad. Sometimes I'm irritated. Like, sometimes that's why I hate going up in L.A. You know, I feel like as soon as I get off the stage in L.A., my jokes is up there again the next day.
Like, right.
Oh, come on, fam. I ain't even left the city.
What is, for you, I mean, talk about the, I guess, the reasoning or the moment where you said, you know, I'm going to leave Chicago. Because you were a Chicago star. You had the show at Jokes and Notes. You had a lot going on here. People knew who you are. I mean, everything about it. What moved you to say, you know what, I'm going to take this to Hollywood. I'm going to try to get myself on television and films.
You know, it was more of a spiritual thing for me. I was praying one day and, you know, felt God tell me to leave. You know, it's time for you to move. And I didn't even know what was next. I'm like, leave what? You know what I mean? And It was tough leaving jokes in those. That was a regular, like a lot of comics can't have a regular paycheck. Right. It was like having a corporate job. The crazy thing is when I quit, I was a little nervous, you know what I'm saying? Then I got a call from Ricky Smiley to tour with him.
That's a good
literally
call to get, yeah.
Right after that, it was like, yo, what are you doing for the next few months? I'm like, nothing, you know? And I started touring with Ricky Smiley. And, you know, that was fun. And working with Ricky made me a better comedian and more confident in myself. You know, he used to host all the shows we did on the tour with him. And sometimes I closed out the show or whatever, and he'll be pushing me. Like, I want you to destroy it. You know, you just don't get no headline of comedian
right.
telling you to be the best on his show. But that's what he was doing. He was pushing me to be the best on the show.
I heard an interview with Deion Cole where he was talking about when he was on Def Comedy, and he kind of got bounced off it because he ran out of material. He's like, I wasn't prepared for what they were asking for. For you, do you find yourself in the same situation? Because I've read that you're very prolific when it comes to material. You're writing jokes all the time.
Yeah.
What's that process like to be able to put sets together?
Well, it's easier for me. Like, it's so funny, that story with Deion, that's because he was new. It's kind of like with Chris Tucker, too. Like, you can't control you exploding, right? You did that 5-minute set you wrote for TV. You ain't know, oh, wait, they want me to do it? You know what I mean? That's all I had. So, which is a good thing about, for me, I was able to groom myself here, right? I was able to have time to play. Mm-hmm. I didn't rush anything. I stayed here as long as I can. Well, I had hours of material by the time I started moving around. You know what I'm saying? So my process is really me just, it's freestyling. So what I do, I do this now. I come to Chicago, maybe for a few weeks straight, and do jokes and notes like a million times, and go up there with no set at all, and whatever happens,
yeah,
happens.
Interesting, yeah.
I just did a show here at a couple weeks ago here at this hall, and did an hour and a half freestyle. I ain't know what I was going to do. But the audience is my audience, right? So if I know they came to see me, I can say whatever I want. And that this is the first time I ever stepped back. Like, I think I've been cocky about it because I was doing it easily, but I had time off this time. So to do it with that time, I'm going backstage like, how did I just pull?
No, because you
did
see,
I just rob these?
I mean, you've seen such, right, you hear about those stories about, you know, if a Jerry Seinfeld or Chris Rock wants to get back on stage, you could see him in a New York comedy club, like trying out material. Mm-hmm. It's the same for you. The process of like working up new stuff is getting on a stage in Chicago where it's familiar,
yeah,
and being able to do that.
Seinfeld and Chris, the difference with them is that they do know what they're going to do. They know what they're working on.
They're just trying it out.
I'm right. Like, I don't know, because that's what makes it sound real, everything I'm saying. That's what made me love Bernie Mac. One thing I started seeing by watching Bernie Mac clips on YouTube was that those Kings of Comedy shows, he almost did a different set each time. And I'm like, how's you doing that? You know what I'm saying? That means he was just going. It's a confidence when you know your audience love you, right? You know your audience love you. Let's conversate. Let's get real. I'm going to be myself in front of y'all. You know what I'm saying? That's how I'm going to create this dope material.
Lil Rel, stand-up comedian. His special that was on Comedy Central is now on Netflix. He's also starring in the NBC show, The Carmichael Show. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll talk more about your career. Lil Rel in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Lil Rel Howery, a stand-up comedian who's on the NBC show, The Carmichael Show, which just wrapped up. Congratulations on the season.
Yeah, season 3, too. We got a pickup. We renew, yeah.
It's a show that at first you're like, oh, okay, here's a situational comedy that's done with a couple of cameras. You're like, oh, I've seen it. But it's actually getting great reviews. People really like The Carmichael Show.
People love the show, and I love being a part of something like that. You know, I mean, a lot of times you could take a job or two that, like, doing this for the check. And, you know, it's not
right.
prolific.
Right. It's network TV, right?
But this network, but it's good, though. My little brother said this to me yesterday. I thought it was dope. He was like, man, I could watch your show anywhere, and I don't care who I'm around, we're going to have a conversation about the episode afterwards, even if I don't know them. That's what that show, that's what shows used
that's
to
what it
do.
It brings you, yeah.
You couldn't watch All in the Family without talking about
right. Well, that's a mark afterwards. Of a good sitcom, right?
That's a mark of a great sitcom. That's what Norman Lear had. He made the blueprint. And it was weird that for a long time people went away from that, which I don't know why. Like, why do y'all go away from that?
Is it because maybe there's been so many misses over the years where they try to do it and it doesn't work and they're like, okay, we got to shake this up?
Well, they tried it. Well, this is where the misses come in. I think when they went away from the comedian starring in the show, right? Because we had a few, well, you know, when you look at Alder Family, that kind of that helped change the game. Because like, oh, we don't need the comic, you know.
Right. We can have actors, right?
Yeah. So when you stop letting the comedian create the voice of the show and what that is, it changed everything. And now that I think the comedian is getting it back, you know, Gerard, mm-hmm. this is his thing. This mm-hmm. is his family. This mm-hmm. is his show. You know, so it's a, and that's a, if you think about it, it's a lot of great shows happening, to me, in my opinion, that's led by the comic. You know what I'm saying? And we about to create these new dope voices because of that. You look at Key and Peele, for instance, right? To see what they're doing now and what they're about to do with movie-wise, because now they're about to go to another level, is because mm-hmm. they trust that Jordan Peele writes all that stuff. That dude is a... He wrote a horror film on me. I'm in a horror film that this dude wrote, which is crazy. But that's now we can do whatever. We comics are really creative, man.
Is it hard for you to make the transition to be that situational actor where you're coming in through the door and you say your line and everybody laughs, and then you say another line and everybody laughs? Is that difficult for a stand-up comedian?
Nah. If you think about it, first of all, it's a live studio audience, so we know how to perform in front of an audience. That timing. We have that timing thing down. And I've always wanted to be on a sitcom, so... It wasn't awkward. I think, you know, it was me adjusting to blocking and everything like that. You know who was a big help for that was Said the Entertainer, man. Like, before we started doing the Carmichael Show and I came to L.A., I had just called him just to check in on him. And he was like, yo, come to the Soul Man set. And he had me come to the Soul Man set just so I could see what a rehearsal looks like for a sitcom.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
And it helped me. Right. By the time we started doing it, I felt comfortable because I watched it. I didn't know any of that stuff till he brought me on stage.
And that's part of it, too. The intimidation is not you killing on stage. Yeah. It's about what you're supposed to do as an actor behind the scene, how you're supposed to act on a set.
Said was real specific about even the way he was telling me to, like, when you get the laugh, to wait. Wait a second, then you go. It's a way to deliver while the laugh is dying down. I'm like, but he had to tell me nothing, but he did. He told me all this stuff, and it helped.
You mentioned Dion Cole and Damon Williams. You mentioned Said the Entertainer. Kevin Hart, the relationship with Kevin Hart. But it does seem like Hollywood's about relationships, and you have developed these relationships because of your personality. Talk about what that means for you as a young stand-up comedian in Hollywood.
It means a lot. I mean, I've done a good job with not being annoying.
That's number one rule.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a cool guy. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't gonna be extra. I ain't gonna be trying material on you. If we had an after party, bro, I'm getting girls. Yeah, that's right. What it is. You know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna be like, hey, Seth, so I wrote this joke. And then Frank gonna say, like, you know,
Seth, give me a spot.
That drives me crazy. Right. If I see a comic hanging out with me and he doing that, first I check it, like, fam, if you're gonna be trying your material at this bar, bro, go home.
Is that a thing? Do people do that?
That's all the time. Because especially in LA, it's kind of tough because everybody's always. Because you're on a sitcom now, so not everybody's extra. It's like you dating these girls who give you monologues. You're like, they're not even looking at you. Like, and then my dad. I'm like, oh, all right, man. Well, check.
Problems you didn't think you'd have, huh?
I didn't think I had that problem. But that's why I have relationships with, like they said, Bill Bellamy, you know, Kev, Dion, D-Ray. Like, I have so many great relationships with comedians. And even with, like when I did the Living Color reboot, me and Keenan had a great relationship. And I'm cool with a lot. It surprises people that I know everybody. You know what I mean? Like we'll go to these parties, like, well, you know everybody because I'm cool. I be chilling. Like when I go to these little things, I just be minding my business and then hopefully spark a conversation.
The In Living Color reboot, mm-hmm. which didn't really take off.
Yeah.
But for you as a kid who watched that program, who, you know, we talked at the beginning of this conversation about watching SNL, even Quickwits, to be a part of a reboot, to work with Keenan, to understand the idea of a new In Living Color, what was that like?
It was surreal, man. It was one of those things. Every once in a while, I speak up things I want, right? So when I heard it was coming back, I was like, I remember DM and Damon Jr., like, who can I send my tape to? Like, I don't know, my uncle. and how it happened was crazy. I remember, like, comics weren't giving me information. And,
yeah, right.
You know, and it happened in a weird way. It happened where they was looking on, they was on
they,
YouTube.
It was just competitive? Like, they didn't want to tell you about
they
it?
They didn't want
it,
nobody, because everybody wanted that.
Everybody wanted
Every
it.
Comic in the country was trying to get on that show. Everybody. That's the only show I've ever seen. Everybody. Black, white, Asian. Everybody was trying to get on that show.
Let me ask, why didn't it work? I mean, it seems like it's a no-brainer.
We shot it. And it was funny. It's whatever that Fox and Wayne's relationship is never. The opening sketch for the reboot is Keenan sitting there and the Fox executives telling him that he'll never be on the network again.
So you wonder why it didn't.
That's what he opened the show with.
Yeah, I guess I guess we now know the answer, right?
I almost feel like he did it just to throw it in their face.
All right, so let's talk. I'm interested, you know, obviously you've got a lot of projects and you got some stuff coming up and you've had a ton of success. For stand-up comedy, and you continue to stay on stage. You said before that stand-up's your ministry, that yeah. in a way stand-up is therapy. What does that mean?
Because comics always compare us to preachers sometimes. You know, the way we deliver things, the way we get the crowd going. My uncle's a pastor, so I hung out with nothing but pastors, right? And I call it our ministry because it makes people feel something, right? That's why people go to church. They go to church because you want to feel something. You want to feel motivated. You want to feel good. You want to feel like life is going to be better. You want to feel like that. So with comedy does that. When people come to a comedy show, they don't come to feel bad. They come to feel better. Right. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, if you're a dope comic, which is one of the reasons why I love doing What They Do Wednesdays, it was a line every week to get in there because people felt like they had to have their midweek Wednesday.
It was like cathartic for them.
It was an open mic. I made an open mic look like a regular show. It used to freak open micers out that came from up north. Like, wait a minute, it's a real show. It's really people in here. The Chicago Bears, the Bulls.
These aren't just my friends. Right.
They popping bottles of Moet. Like, yeah, man, that's what it is, fam. Look at all these fine women. Oh, man, I want to try new stuff out. You know, sweating.
Do you miss that experience now being in Hollywood?
I do. I miss hosting a dope night and pushing it. Because there was a lot I put into that. You know what I'm saying? I used to go to the clubs. When I first started, I had a guest list. So it would be nothing but women on that guest list. Because if you know, that's who love to laugh, right? And then if you get a bunch of fine women at your shows, every dude is going to come, and they're going to come stunting. You know,
out there, anyone who wants to start a new open mic, that was the formula, right? Or a party
yes,
in Chicago.
If you want
right?
to make money,
that's the formula.
I was trying to make that bread, man. That was the perfect time, and we had the perfect after party afterwards, and it was just, you know, it was, yeah.
Well, the last question, and you have a long way to go in your career, and you're continuing to go up, and congratulations on all your success.
Thanks.
Thinking back to the kid who was at Crane High School, now being on Carmichael's show, doing a stand-up show at the Vic that gets to be seen by the entire country, now on Netflix. What does that mean to you? What does that make you feel when you think back to being a kid on the west side of Chicago?
Because when I think about 17-year-old me, and it's, you know, you think about friends you lost over time and who probably... I know it's gonna get all emotional, but it's surreal. You know what I'm saying? Like I saw it, and I didn't know if it was real, but you know I'm experiencing it, and it's dope. You know, everybody don't get a chance to live their dream, especially from here, and you know all the crazy stuff that happens. That's why I tell young people, man, don't let your environment don't mean that's what you got to be. You know what I'm saying? And I'm literally thinking about probably why I'm all teary-eyed, is that's the 17-year-old kid who just wanted to live his dream that he sat in front of the TV and he watched NBC and he's like, that, is that realistic, God?
Can I do that?
You know, so that's why when I think about the Vic and how that was, and then I think about the love I get and just to be on a sitcom and to do all this stuff, it's surreal. It really is. Even just, you know, just today going around and, you know, talking to different people, whatever. I was hoping I got emotion in my own time, but it's just surreal, man. It really is. I worked really hard because I believed in myself, and I'm, you know, hopefully I'll motivate some young kid who not sure if they're picking the right choice or thing, and they like, yo, he did it, so I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So it feels great, man.
All right. Lil Rel, a stand-up comedian. You can find his special Irrelevance on Netflix this month. Also, he's on the Carmichael Show, which just wrapped up. It's got another season coming up. Congratulations
another
on
season.
That. Lil Rel, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man.
Pretty awesome to have Lil Rel in studio. Got to be honest. To have... he's a great stand-up comedian. He's got a bit where in his special where he talks about coming back to Chicago and he's really excited, you know, and he's like, he wants to reminisce. So he takes the Jackson bus to reminisce of what it's like when living on the west side. And he's like, everything's fine. And you're like, yeah, man, life is looking good. And then the next thing, you know, the high schoolers get on. And then it's just chaos and havoc. And I know this. If you ever take any bus, mm-hmm. the Ashland bus, this always happens to me. I'm like, oh, they're going to Wells High School. I'm like, ah. And he's like, they start freestyle rapping about me. He's just like, look at this guy. He's old. Look at him. Hey, what did I? You don't know me. I'm doing pretty good. That's such a good bit. Anyway, great to talk to Lil Rel Howery, and what a success story for a kid from Crane High School here in Chicago. And it was nice that he got emotional at the end.
Hey, made him cry.
Hey,
jerk. You know?
Jeez, Barbara Walters.
Yeah, I know, right? He makes a good point. You know, there's a lot of ways to go. You're 17 years old on the west side of Chicago, and the way he went was has worked out for him.
If you want to win the team, better go and see the Bulls. Why would you be so slow? Why? Spit it so fast when I'm going to the hole. They say I got a D-Rose flow. Yeah. Banging with the body when I'm going for the rebound. Did I almost lose you? Steady getting with him when I'm going to the rhythm in the paint like Carlos Boozer. How your two fouls came. I kick a new style, man. I can rip with a pro from the lip. They can pepper me to pit like
this. The famed Twista track with Carlos Boozer. Is Boozer on the track? Is he coming up? No, you got it. There's Noah. That's right. There was a great Sam Panionovich. You got to know this. There's a great Carlos Boozer. When he was in town, he had a rap album, right? Or a couple of songs that he put together. Here.
Booze out, man.
Now I understand. Now I was trying to figure out where the Bulls went wrong, and I think this jogged my memory that it may have been Carlos Boozer. We didn't have these problems when Booze was in town, right?
That's incredible.
Sam Panionovich here from WGN Radio Sports. Huge day in Chicago sports news as the Sun-Times is reporting that Joakim Noah is telling teammates he will not return to the Chicago Bulls this summer. Now, that's already been refuted a little bit from a couple of players. I didn't say that.
Well, and a couple of media outlets as well. So there's a riffraff now. Who's saying what? What is it going to come down to? But the fact that you have these questions is the problem. Right. I mean, Joakim Noah has been here since 2007. First-round pick out of Florida, 9th pick overall. He's been one of the most loved players, I think, by the fan base. And you can look at it physically, and we've talked about this for months, maybe even over a year, about how the body's just not the same.
Well, he fought through some injuries. He only played a couple games this last season, right? I mean, he played the
29
last
year.
You know, and he didn't seem to fit when he did play, and he might have been playing hurt, but he didn't seem to fit in that sort of run-and-gun, open, wide-open Fred Hoiberg system. He's a much more Coach Thibodeau, like banging bodies down underneath kind of player.
I think you just sort of started to hint at it, and we're going to try and do the best we can to sort of examine why this has happened. You said the word Thibodeau. I mean, you look around that roster, and his guys are just boom, boom, boom. They're dropping like flies. You know, of that team, the 2011-2012 team that was number one overall seed, this is pre-Rose injury.
This is when he blew it out in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. There's only three guys left from that team.
Really?
And it's Rose, Noah, Gibson. So if you lose Noah, we're talking about, I mean, Justin, this isn't a long period of time.
These guys are
just getting jettisoned out, and then the coach gets jettisoned out. So this whole roster rebuild, it didn't just start when they fired Tibbs. This was sort of like a plan, you know, general manager Gar Forman. He's working with Paxson, no doubt about it, John Paxson. They're trying to rebuild sort of on the fly, and you know the bottom fell on at the end of the Tibbs era. But Noah, like you said, is a Tibbs guy, and he doesn't fit in this new system. Unfortunately, he had a knee injury at the end of the Tibbs.
You're a sports guy. You hang out with the sports guys. Where does a rumor like this come from? I mean, obviously there's some merit to it because it's pretty obvious as we talk about the reasons why. But, I mean, is Joe Colley and the Sun-Times writers, do they have sort of relationships with the players where they're like, here, you didn't hear it from me, but Joakim just called me and said he ain't coming back?
Good question. It did say an unnamed source, so immediately that gets people to second guess it. I will give Joe a little bit of credit, though. I think that it's true. I think that he looks around that roster and looks in that locker room, and I don't think that he thinks they can win. Now, whether he said it or not, if somebody in Joe's camp relayed the message, you know, the agent came out and the Tribune reported that the agent is in contact with the Bulls every day. Well, of course. I mean, if Joakim Noah is a free agent, I mean, of course.
And the agent's not doesn't want this out because then it makes it
leverage
easier.
Leverage is gone.
Yeah, right.
So you have to sort of shine up that dirty penny and say, we'd love to stay in Chicago.
But it is kind of, a little bit unusual for a player to announce.
Right, the question is, why does this come out?
Right.
I don't think maybe it's not 100% true, but there's a lot of truth in what is being said in the piece, including the loyalty in the front office, which is very important to the Reinsdorf family. You know, Gar Forman is really good friends with Michael Reinsdorf, and the Bulls charities are led by the wife of Gar Forman and the wife of Michael Reinsdorf.
Well, that just plays to the loyalty.
And,
you
start putting puzzle pieces together, and, you know.
Now, to be fair, for the management structure at the Chicago Bulls, the goal was to, they realized that in their estimation, meaning, you know, it's not exact science. But their thought was, we need to play a game that's closer to what they're doing in Golden State, where we can spread the floor. We have some of the, you know, with Derrick Rose, we have a penetrating guard. We got an opportunity to kick out. We've got guys that are supposed to hit their shots, and Dougie Buckets and, you know, the other guys.
The Miritich.
This is the style. We don't want to do this slow it down half court that Coach Tibbs gets us to the second round of the playoffs and we can't beat LeBron. So with that being said, it's not out of the question, nor is it a bad management move to move a Noah or to not re-sign him.
No, and you'll miss everything that he's brought you. I don't know if you'll never see, I mean, I don't know the last good center before Noah. I mean, back to Bill Cartwright, I guess Luke Longley. So it was a while. You know, there's a gap there between those players and Joakim Noah. But, you know, the old school big man is becoming a thing of the past.
Well, you're seeing what I love about it, and we're seeing right now in Golden State, we're even seeing it a little bit in the other side. But, you know, those big men in Oklahoma City, Adams and Cantor, those guys, you know, are sort of bucking the trend that we're talking about. Like Golden State shooting threes, you're going to win. Those guys are actually changing the course of that series. They beat the Spurs doing the same thing. Big men still have a place in the NBA.
Yeah, they have to be used the right way, though. And I think, you know, Golden State last year ran into a great situation where I don't think the scouting was really there. I don't think teams understood exactly how good some of those players were. And the hardest thing to do in sports is repeat. And I think a lot of teams last year tried to kind of mirror what Golden State did and try and get up and down the floor with them and shoot a lot of shots. And that sort of played into their hands. This year, the Thunder, give Billy Donovan a lot of credit with Oklahoma City. He has utilized the players, like you said, that are bigger, stronger. They're winning the rebound war. They're getting up and down the floor. And if you miss a three-point shot, you've got Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. You know, these guys are flying up and down the floor, superstar caliber players. And in other words, Oklahoma City isn't succumbing to what Golden State wants to do. They're going to do their own thing, and they think that with their plan they can win.
Well, let's continue the conversation, talk about the Bulls and what we think we might see this summer. We're gonna have...
I don't know. Maybe. It could be premature.
Sam Fanionovic is here from WGN Radio Sports. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Carlos. Mic check. One, two. Boozer. Dream it, believe it, do it. Let's go.
Now this is Boozer.
Already know I cross them over, take them to the hole. Look back, thank God. Look forward, trust God. That's why when I'm in the paint, you know I go hard. Might go baseline one time and abuse ya. Run back down the court like you know it was Boozer. I used to be another little fellow with some hoop dreams. Now I got the game laced up. Shoot string.
I'm on a winning streak.
There you go.
I'm not losing.
Carlos Boozer.
I think I remember the name of this album. Is it Full Court Press? Is that the name of the album? It was some weak name like that. Full Court Press, yo. Like, oh, wow.
I think we're figuring it out here with Sam Fanionovic. What the Bulls are missing is Carlos Boozer. They're missing that guy who's like who can really complain to the refs.
That's great,
what he was really good at.
It's a great transition because at the end of Boozer's career here, he used to always yell at Noah to get the rebound. You remember that?
He wouldn't even move.
Grab it, Joe! Joe!
Hey, Joe! Oh, man.
Joe, grab it, Joe.
My bad.
The cameras,
if you're ever at the United Center, that's what you would hear.
Well, no, because they used to put microphones under backboard, and they kind of, you know, so it's built into the basket. And nationally televised games, you would hear Boozer, get it, Joe, Joe. You know, it's like right over Boozer's fingertips.
There's that. There's the my bad, and then there's also the what? Me. I didn't touch him.
And then
I didn't touch him.
Yeah, Taj. It was just comedy. So the rap thing makes sense, I guess. But yeah, grab it,
all
Joe.
Right. So let's talk about the Bulls' summer plans here. If Joakim Noah is really not coming back to the Bulls, what does that do for their cap space? Because, you know, I guess I'm seeing that the Bulls are going to have some money here.
Yeah, and the salary cap's going up. I'll pull the deals up here in a second, but a lot of money going to come off the books because you think about, you know, down the road next year, Derrick Rose gone, Pau Gasol gone, Joakim Noah, he's going to want, you know, I mean, he signed a 5-year deal for $60 million, so that's $12 million a year. His camp sees the cap going up, so he's going to want somewhere in that realm, but that's off the books, so you've got room for a max contract. Problem with that is nobody comes here if it's a max contract player. And year after year after year, whether it's, you know, ever since Jordan left, you know, Tim Duncan was rumored at one point, Tracy McGrady, you know, the Bulls courted those guys when they were
trades with
coming
Kobe
up.
Bryant and Carmelo
well,
Anthony.
Well, I'm talking just you're a free agent. Yeah, right, you get to pick your spot. 2010, it was Wade and Bosch and LeBron. Then it was LeBron again. Then it was Carmelo, and the Bulls were in the mix. End of the day, they don't come here. So you're stuck. And, you know, to be in a position where they're at right now where you're not good enough to win a title, obviously you missed the playoffs, you're not good enough to win a title, but you were too good to be bad enough to get a good pick because you want to be in the top
three, four, five pick.
I mean, they're picking 14th, so they're going to get some bum and, you know, it's going to be the same mess. They've got to get creative here.
All right, so let me ask you, the drama that is happening at the UC, you've got Joakim Noah saying he's not coming back. We saw...
Allegedly.
We saw right at the beginning or the end of the season turmoil with Jimmy Butler. Is he the leader? Is he not? There was question. Gar Forman said it's not out of the question. We would trade him. It seemed to hurt his feelings. Then we saw that Jimmy Butler was the spokesperson or the representative for the Bulls at the draft. Is everything okay with Jimmy Butler and Bulls management now?
Well, it depends on who you ask, because I could see with my own eyes, not only have I been told, but you could see sort of, you know, Jimmy Butler trying to blossom out of his shell. And I think some of the players sort of didn't take offense to it, but they were like, wait a minute, you know, we've been here longer. There's been reports that Noah and Butler were about to literally go after each other. That's how bad it had gotten. But Joe hurt his shoulder in January and it didn't play the rest of the way. So I think there was some opposition. That's probably the best word to Jimmy sort of just saying, he said it.
Right.
You know, like, I'm the leader. I have to lead.
Right, but it's one thing to say and one thing to do.
Well, which he later came back and said that, you know, I learned that I have to keep my mouth shut and I just have to lead, which is what leaders do. They don't talk about leading, they lead. To answer your question, I think that he already had the key to the car. I think, you know, management, by giving him that max contract, said, you're the guy. I mean, you don't pay somebody like that to play second fiddle. So, you know, he gets that 5-year contract. He thinks that he's in charge, and now, I don't know what he's been told, but you can only imagine that you know, this has been in play for a while here, where down the road, this is your team.
Okay, so that brings us to the third of the three amigos, Derrick Rose. Now, there have been reports out in the last couple of weeks, I've been watching just sort of the debrief for the season, that this terrible, terrible season, that they said Derrick Rose is the best statistical player and probably the best potential player that the Bulls have on their roster.
Well, you can shape stats.
So the question is Derrick Rose, is it still Derrick Rose's team? I mean, can he coexist with Jimmy Butler? There's so much drama around those two guards. And, you know, are we seeing the twilight of a Derrick Rose run here in Chicago since this is his last year, that big contract? And that usually means if it's not working out, he's gone at the trade deadline. If he's not gone at the trade deadline, he's out next summer.
The fact that you have to ask that question is just depressing in general,
right?
Because who knows what conversation we're having here in 2016 if Derrick Rose doesn't get hurt. You know, I mean, that's really been the ever plaguing issue with Derrick Rose. He just can't stay healthy, and the body's betrayed him. And I think mentally, he doesn't do things he used to do because in the back of his mind, he, you know, could picture himself on crutches again. And I think it's changed the way he's played. Is it still his team? As long as he's there, he's on tier one. I mean, I don't think it's anybody's one team. That's really not how it works anymore. You know, one guy doesn't have complete control over a locker room outside of maybe Cleveland, you know, where LeBron, you know, is the mayor of the city essentially and can do whatever he wants. But, you know, you're looking at a top three leadership group of Rose, Butler, and Noah. Problem was, Noah was taken out of the lineup, couldn't stay on the floor, so he's sort of been vacuumed out of that situation. And now you've got two ball-heavy guards who each need the ball to play well. it's not a good mix X's and O's wise. So I don't think I never bought into the fact that they didn't like each other. They just don't seem
to play the same
fit
game
well
right.
together. Yeah.
Well, I kind of made a joke earlier in the show about Derrick Rose. You know, the refs don't seem to give much respect to Rose. He has the same kind of game where he slashes to the hoop and he gets there and there's so much more. Oh, the ball's loose, even though he ran into the center. You know, and that's what kind of effectively got him hurt. But early in his career when he was making those moves, it seemed like every time he got to the hole, there was a foul call and he got to the line. There were some times in this season where he'd make the same – he wasn't get to the line at all in a game. Like zero attempts. Like, do we see Derrick Rose having to change his game, or will his style of play get him back to the free throw line?
The way that his body has sort of I guess changed over time. It's always going to be like a restrictor plate on a boat, and you know it's going to restrict how fast you can go and some of the things you can do well. And he's never going to be the same player. I mean, you have a couple knee injuries, and then try and do what he used to be able to do, fly through the air. I think he dunked twice last year. And you know the Derrick Rose of old, you're picturing flying over somebody every other night, if not every night.
Right.
So I think physically, mentally, he's just not the same player. He wants to play well, but, I mean, does he have to reinvent himself? He'd like to. I don't know if he's willing to do it, though. I mean, he's going to get a lot of money no matter what he does. Some team's going to give him some cash. He's still making millions of bucks from, you know, all the sponsors he has, so he's going to be fine. I don't know. I'm curious because nobody has this answer, and whoever acts like they do outside of that Rose family, they're lying.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows. That thing is such a cocoon. You can't get in there. You can't penetrate that camp because they've been burned so many times before. I mean, there's like three guys on the national media that like have the Rose family, you know, on speed dial. Otherwise, you just don't get in there.
Right. Mike Wilbon. Someone like that, right?
There's a couple others.
Yeah.
I'll let you keep guessing. It's not Pete Zimmerman, that's for sure. I know, yeah. Who?
They never, I'm always like, dear Derek.
Yeah.
Dear Derek.
Well, if you weren't in before he got hurt, you're not getting
you're not in now.
I mean, as far as the big scoops.
Oh, great.
Could it be Stephen A. Smith?
Well, he thinks he's in everybody.
Now, let me tell you, I just got off the phone with a very good friend of Derrick Rose, and he told me specifically that Rose is not happy in Chicago anymore.
He said Chicago. That's how he says Chicago.
Stephen A. Smith.
That was good. Useless. That was good. Ugh. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back more with Sam Panionovich. We got to talk Golden State and Cleveland. Let's talk some real NBA.
The NBA champs are so upset they're kicking players below the belt.
Oh man!
I've been Steph Curry with the shot, been cooking with the sauce, Chef Curry with the pot, boy. 360 with the wrist, boy.
To download here on WGN Radio, Steph Curry with the shot, Sam Panionovich with the analysis. You like that, huh?
That's been shooting around, actually.
I think that was what Drake originally said. Yeah, he was like,
I've been
Steph
in
Curry
the gym
with the shot, Panionovich with the analysis.
Nothing more depressing than not being able to jump anymore, though. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, right.
I can't jump.
The last time you jumped.
I used to be able to get up there, I promise. And trust me, I'm not bragging because what I'm about to say next is embarrassing. I can barely even like touch the rim anymore.
Sam, on Saturday morning, I had a little bit of time, and I'm like, I went across to the hoops, you know, they had a court there, and I had a basketball, and I'm like, and there was one guy on each. In the morning, it's not full on; it's just one guy on each thing. So I'm like, I shoot the three.
You're a lefty, aren't you?
Nail it, yeah.
Yeah, you're a lefty.
I shoot left, so I'm like, nail it, like swish, like that. So did a little move, hit it right off the perfect off the glass, like a nice little fade. Came back, hit another one. I was like, man. And then I got tired. And then it was like
after three shots,
I said, I'm like, maybe I'll shoot some free throws and see what my percentage is, you know, like shoot 10. I hit one. And then I kept going and it got worse. I mean, there was a stretch where I was like 0 for 20. Like, I was just like, all right. And that's when more people showed up. So I'm like, now I'm stressed and there's pressure. The person's looking at me. I'm like, that's just something wrong with my elbow.
It really gives you a good appreciation of how awesome these players in the NBA are. I mean, those are some of the best athletes in the world. Hockey athletes impress me, you know, especially a guy like Duncan Keith who's skating, you know, 30 minutes a night in every big game. Football players, some of the guys, I think that's more strength than speed, if anything, you know, and body, you know, maintenance. The receivers are fast, but I mean, basketball is so fun to watch.
I'm amazed by a linebacker. Linebackers are always like, oh, you have to get past huge linemen.
Yeah.
And be able to catch the speedy running back. Like, that's the hardest position to play, I think.
Back to, did you ever play on a chain net hoops?
We had
a chain net at the park where we grew up, and there was nothing like the sound of that chain net.
Ching.
Oh, like I wish I had a chain. I used to carry a chain. I don't do that anymore. The sound of that chain net, oh, brings back memories.
All right, let's talk about the what we're seeing in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
The two series we're seeing, the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is a playoff game. The game five, huge game here for Toronto to go back to Cleveland. Right now in the fourth quarter with 10 to go, Cleveland has a 102-64 lead.
Yeah, LeBron James woke up. LeBron was like, I think I'm going to try tonight.
But I think this one of the problems I have with a 40-point game like this is that, it tells me is like, I'm not sure the Toronto Raptors are supposed to be here.
Right.
And I'm not saying that to disparage the Toronto Raptors organization, but it really does feel, and I know I'm biased, but it at the end of last year, the firing of Coach Thibodeau was the concept that Fred Hoiberg was going to lift this team past the second round into the third round. We should be being blown out by 40 points.
Yeah, maybe it'd be 30. I wonder who would be hurt by now on the Bulls roster. Somebody would be hurt. And maybe Hoiberg might roll an ankle. I think there were four really, really good teams this year in the NBA, and three of them are left. So it's about what I expected. Maybe you could throw San Antonio into the mix out west, but – Cleveland, the only really good team in the East. They're going to be in the finals. They're going to probably beat them in game six because this loss has just broken their hearts. Toronto, I mean, they're down 40
points.
I mean, you're getting your ass kicked. You're not going to come back from that.
No.
It's just not going to happen. And then you've got the Thunder and the Warriors, which I think has been the best playoff series.
What's happening there? Because, you know, Pete and I are on the air. We don't get a chance to watch the games. You know, Golden State has just a historic run. I mean, breaking the record, having the most wins in the regular season, it was a foregone conclusion that they were maybe going to have a struggle against the San Antonio team that didn't even make it there. The Oklahoma City took them on. What's happening, and why are the Golden State Warriors struggling?
You're going to beat Golden State by getting up the floor, taking away offensive rebounds, and if you could turn them over, do that, because they get sloppy with the ball. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they've been turning the ball over, and that's been pressure from these long, active bodies that the Thunder have employed. They're winning the rebound war, the Thunder are, and they've got two of the best players, maybe two top five players in the league on the same team.
Well, they were talking about one of the hidden gems, and we, you know, because we had this terrible, terrible comparison of the Golden State Warriors and the 96 Bulls.
Yeah, which was
and
dumb.
They talked about the Golden State Warriors playing sort of sneaky defense. They're a good defensive team. But when I watched
metrically they are, but
Westbrook to the hole every time.
Throw the regular season out. It's over. It's over. You're not playing the Pelicans anymore. You know, you've got to beat the Thunder 4 out of 7 times. And right now the Thunder are playing the best basketball at the most opportune time. And it's been their two best players. I don't care. You know, yeah, Steven Adams has been good. And Cantor's been all right. And, you know, Roberson's not actually been that bad at all. But Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook are outplaying the star players for Golden State. I almost said San Francisco. They play in Oakland. I'm so confused now. But Oklahoma City, who used to be Seattle, by the way, is playing very, very well.
Now, okay, so I heard on ESPN today where one of the analysts said there's no 10% chance, there's no way that Golden State can come back. But, you know, I'm not very good at math, but the Golden State Warriors don't lose at home. They have the best road record, obviously, with winning 73 games in the regular season. It's not out of the question that they tied their laces tighter and they win three straight in the series.
I heard one analyst put it so eloquently. You know, I think it's an uphill battle for Golden State, but if there's one team that can do it, I think it's them.
Yeah, right.
Like, okay, did you just pick both sides of the equation? they're not. They just don't seem. Put it this way: this team was playing with the thing I like to call swagger.
They don't have it.
It's gone.
And that's a big part of basketball.
It's gone. It's a huge part of their game. And when they're feeling confident, you know, last round, Curry says, I'm back, I'm here. You know,
yeah,
he pumped his
hurt.
Chest. And
right.
Well, I mean, he is hurt. I still believe the MCL is not where it should be and where he would like it to be. But they're getting outplayed and outclassed in the Western Conference Finals. So if they lose to Oklahoma City, I mean, that's a really good team.
Okay, but to play devil's advocate, two of the final three games are in Golden State or in Oakland. That's a tough. I mean, Oklahoma State's won there, so that's not an issue. But you know, the record is pretty impeccable.
I think the Thunder win it in six.
Okay.
Now, you know, did I say that before the series with you? No. No. You'll just have to take my word for it.
I was making jokes about sweep. I thought Golden
State. I didn't
think
they were going to repeat. I never thought. It's just so hard to do. And when you think about, you know, a very small, finesse type team that relies on a lot of shots from behind the three-point line, it's hard to repeat that success and win titles. It just really is. I mean, they don't – yeah, the game has changed and there's a lot more jump shots, but that sustained shooting at such a high level, eventually you just cool off. And they've cooled off in this series, and look out. Here's Russell Westbrook dunking on your head.
What's the issue? We'll take a quick break after, so quick answer. What is Draymond Green doing? I mean, is he frustrated, so he's kicking people below the belt? What is happening? Because he's done it twice now.
He didn't do it on purpose, so that's what he said. It was an accident to
he
kick
seems,
somebody in
I
the
mean,
groin.
Watching him, and not just those situations, the ones where he actually kicked below the belt, but you've seen him in this series get a little like chippy when he makes a basket. He's got to run into the guy. Is Draymond Green? I don't watch enough Golden State Warrior basketball. Is that his persona? Is he sort of a troublemaker?
He's a tough guy from, you know, inner city Michigan, and he's always played with that chip on his shoulder. So I think the composure is starting to come out of it. Remember the '90s Knicks?
Yeah,
good players, but if you got him down, or like John Starks was a psycho, you know what I'm saying? if he was losing and wasn't synced in to what he was supposed to do, I mean, he went after Reggie Miller's throat. So, I mean, if you get the wrong guy with a little bit of a cold streak and they're not playing well, you can flip that switch and they can turn into somebody different.
Sam Panionovic is here. Let's take a quick break. And if we can, just for the last remaining couple minutes of this hour, I'd love to talk White Sox baseball.
Can we talk this much sports in a row? I don't know.
I know. I'm
too much sports.
The audience is like, what is this?
Talk about something else.
No, not at all. I want to talk about the White Sox. I know, right? We'll tell Sam Panionovic, WGN Radio Sports. Stay with us.
And when it comes to baseball, we have two favorite clubs. And whoever plays the Cubs, we're the South Side Irish, says our
so interesting that we've chosen to talk about the White Sox losing instead of the Cubs winning, but hey, that's Chicago. This is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Sam Panionovic with me tonight talking sports. You were at the cell today. You know, as a Sox fan, you kind of saw a little bit of the shine wearing off about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was that series in Boston where you're like, you know what? We're not winning series. And it seems besides a sweep of the Twins, which just kind of kept that fever going, we've lost every series in pretty much May.
They came home and went on a 3-7 homestand. So,
that's not good.
And, you know, for all the talk all the time, and people always ask me, and Matt Bubala, who works here and, you know, does his show here, he was filling in for Patty, and he was making fun of Sox fans because they don't show up. And I'm like, look, they're just not going to commit until they know the team is really good for real. And right now, you still don't know that. They had a really good April, and it's been a pretty bad May. So here you are, still in first place, but your lead has gone from, I believe, 5 games now down to a half game in about 2 weeks.
And a half game over the Indians and probably like 2 games over the Royals. I mean, and the Tigers.
It's tightened up.
Yeah, it's tightened up. And that's good. I mean, that's good for baseball and it's good for baseball fans. It's just not as dominant as it was at the beginning of the season. I mean, there was a point when the White Sox and the Cubs are the first to 20 games. I mean, what are the Sox have 25 wins now? 27?
27 and 21.
But that, I mean, there was a time, I mean, when they hit 20, they were 20-8 or something like that. So they had a tremendous beginning.
Well, they've lost 11 of 15. They've lost 5 series in a row and they're not scoring runs.
Why? Is it because
they're not scoring runs? The offense has been so bad. And you know, they'll get guys on first and second, you know, nobody out and they just won't score a run. Or, you know, somebody strikes out, bases loaded, one out, next guy flies out. It's just been, you know, the small ball type stuff. I think, again, like in years past, they're reliant on the fireworks, on the home runs for the Abreus.
And they're not getting it,
and the, well, Frazier's leading the American League, I think, now with 14.
But Abreu's, he's got 6 home runs. He's kind of have. I mean, he's had a couple of great games here where not productive games, 3-for-4, 3-for-4, no runs, no RBIs. But he is at least coming out of his shell. I mean, his batting average went down to like 230.
I think it's 258 now.
after two huge games.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's still early. It really is.
Sam, as a Sox fan, though, the thing that I notice about the team is, yes, they're not scoring runs, but then it shifted to then the bullpen imploded. I think it was in that Texas series or whatever. It was just like, what are you guys doing? There was a game in Texas where they gave up like 7 runs.
In one inning.
And yeah, and it was like that could – and they were up like 6, and they should have won that game. Since then, it's been downhill. And
I remember fighting people almost on Twitter because they acted like the season was over. Like some fans were like, oh, it's over.
We win.
You know, it was – no, when they, that when they game lost. When they gave up, oh, fire Robin, you know, season's over.
They may have been right here.
Well, I don't think one loss in the middle of May, actually early May, is going to.
Well, and now we're seeing Chris Sale and Jose Quintana.
Lost one game.
No, I know,
lost
but I'm just
game.
Saying this week, and this is not me. I mean, I heard it today as well.
That's the problem.
Starting pitching is not going well.
You're
for
getting
the Sox.
You're getting to the point here. That's the first time all season that Sale and Quintana have lost back to back games, and you know, Sox fans almost expect them to win every game. I mean, Chris Sale's gonna lose
a
couple games.
He's an amazing start to the season.
You know, he had a rough game. He got pinged around. I'm ready. I'm sure he's gonna be ready to go next game. Quintana, you know, they got 3 runs for him today. They got 1 run last time. They don't score for him when he's on the mound. The problem is the back half. You know, somebody said that, you know, they need 2, maybe 3 more starters. Yeah, so do a lot of teams. You know, like, well, they need a 4 starter. A lot of teams would like to have 4 good starters. Nobody has 5 good starters. You just kind of work with what you have. And right now, they're strong 1-2. They've got a good guy in the works at the 3 spot. And then you've got guys in the 4-5 holes that just have to give you a chance. And their last 2, they did. The 2 before, they didn't. So,
all right, Sammy, let me ask you, because Rick Hahn kind of mentioned this in passing.
I'm going to make a big move.
I'm going to make a big move.
That was a direct quote.
What do you think that move is? Is it hitting? Is it pitching? What's out there right now in the rumor mill in baseball that is available for a White Sox?
The 2 names that I've heard that are the most sexy names that are being bantied about right now: Carlos Gonzalez, who's a left-handed outfielder from Colorado. Sox have money to absorb that contract. It's a big contract. They've been trying to dish him out for a while now because they're sort of like
they
rebuilding.
Know they're rebuilding.
Yeah, they're not.
He's getting
older.
Yeah,
they're not going to win. I think you look at the standings right now. Colorado currently in 3rd, 3 games under. They're not going to. Yeah. They're not going to make the playoffs. And then the pitcher that has been talked about is Sonny Gray,
who's
from
on the DL.
Oakland.
Right.
Yeah. So, but that's a guy that, you know, he's going to be back.
He's had a tough year. He has not played well.
Yeah. And they always said, you know, if 2 organizations get rid of somebody, don't take them. Oakland and Tampa. Like, if those 2 teams are going to trade this guy, he's done. Because those
they
two, like,
trade.
Well, no, the guys, they're trading them for a reason. Because those two teams,
are so smart. Yeah.
The payrolls are so small.
Right.
So you've got to find value.
Yeah, but
I feel like
every pitcher that's pitched in the Oakland system turns out to be a star somewhere. Tim Hudson, remember? Tim Hudson was an A.
Well, he was a star more in Oakland. So yeah. Was Zito. So was Mulder.
Heron? Wasn't Dan Heron at Oakland A?
Right. But they all kind of got traded and then went down.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
Barry Zito signed that deal for 7 years.
What about Zito? Let's get him back.
Yeah. Is he throwing 70 still? The curveball was like 42. He just kind of like...
Well, I think it's... I hope it's not too late. I mean, the White Sox need
they're still
to...
In first. They're still in first. And with 2 wildcard teams now, more teams are in it longer. Remember that.
Right.
You've got 2 wildcard spots that will force a 1-game playoff. So more teams sort of think that they have a chance and they're going to play it out longer.
It's not going to get any easier though. The White Sox schedule has been horrific. The month of May was all playoff teams.
I know you've got to go to
news. I was hoping it was going
to
be the Twins for 2.5 weeks.
I know you've got news, but 3 at the Royals, actually 4 at the Royals, then 3 at the Mets, then 3 at the Tigers, and then, oh, the Nationals come to town and then the Royals are back.
Oh, no.
So of your next 16, you've got pretty much all first-place teams and then the Tigers.
Maybe they'll play to the height of their competition. Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio Sports, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for coming in. I know you're filling in tomorrow morning for Dave Ennett.
I will be
so
here.
So how about that? He's burning it on both ends. Sam, thanks for coming in.
You
man.
Got it.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, singer-songwriter Trevor Sensor just put out his first EP. It's called Texas Girls and Jesus Christ. That was back in April, and it might as well have been eons ago because he's already releasing new music, a new single, Judas Said to Be a Man, on Jaguar Records, which is coming out on May 27th. Trevor Sensor is folk, he's rock, he's Americana, but his vocal styling set him apart. His voice is much more punk, his music much more folk. And what do you get? Well, you get a unique singer-songwriter that's turning heads. Sensor is from Sterling, Illinois, and he joins me in studio for a chat and a live performance. Trevor, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Sterling, Illinois. How does a musician from Sterling, Illinois end up recording music, dealing with European tours? Talk about how you got your big break.
Well, I was going to college out in Iowa, and Dave Kooning happened to be from the Killers. The guitarist happened to be from the same town, and he was home for some reason. And I was playing in a bar, and he saw me, and he pulled me aside, and he's just like, "I love your stuff, and I want to give you a record deal." And I told him that he was like full of crap, basically.
Yeah, do you think you were being punked?
Yeah, I thought I was being punked. It's more so just like the cynicism of like, oh, everybody says that, and then nothing ever happens. Because I've been doing this since I was a kid. You know, I guess I'm still young, but I was younger when I started.
Did I explain your style? I mean, we're going to hear it in just a second, but the way that you, the music is very folk, the guitar, everything you put together, Judas said to be a man, but it's your voice, it's the way that you approach the music that really gives you those punk roots. Am I characterizing it in the right way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think often when there's an acoustic guitar involved, people automatically slap it in the folk area. And I mean, I'm not doing things like there's a guy named like Sam Amidon who's doing like really, that's real folk stuff, contemporary. A lot of my stuff is probably pop songwriting, but just masked really well, you know. So I have folk influences, like, you know, Tom Waits is like a big influence for me. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to describe my music, so you're doing a fine job of it.
Why don't we then let your music do the talking right now and get a live song out if that works for you?
Yeah, so by me.
What are we going to hear here?
I guess I'll play Judas Said to Be a Man.
Great. The single Judas Said to Be a Man, which will be out on Jaguar Records on May 27th. You're also touring with the Staves. You're going to be at Lincoln Hall on June 6th.
Yeah.
A lot of Trevor Sensor in the area coming up here. So, Trevor, here is Judas Said to Be a Man live on the download here on WGN Radio.
Home is something I have never known. As we wave at something like life. Oh, in time, like a parasite, it burdens my young mind. It haunts me all my sad and troubled nights. As we wait for something like life. Oh no, you wait for someone to touch you to the dogs. Always wait for something to go wrong. They won't be something, nothing at all. Oh, well, Judas, tell me, open my young eyes. As we wave at something like life. Well, I'm so sorry. Sorry for the brittle strings I broke. Burning bridges swallowed in the smoke. As we wave at something like life. Oh no, you wave at someone and toss you to the dogs. Always wave at something to go wrong. That you won't be something, nothing at all.
That was singer-songwriter Trevor Sensor with the new single, Judas Said to Be a Man. It's going to be out on May 27th on Jag Jaguar Records. Your vocal stylings are, it's hard for me to picture, like, where's the inspiration from? Because it doesn't feel like it's coming out of your body. It seems to be, I'm not saying that you're, you know, you don't match the voice, but it's so unique. Where do you find inspiration to sing that way?
It just happens that way, probably of drank and smoked too much. That's what they tell me, at least. But yeah, there's not really an inspiration. I mean, there's a lot of different voices you could do. I can do falsetto, for example, but that is the most natural singing voice for me.
Really?
Yeah. I know that you probably don't believe that.
No, I don't. No, but I mean, you could. Everyone listening right now just heard that live. I mean, it seems to be. And when you're in studio, I mean, your facial expressions, you're very colorful in the way that you're presenting your work. So I just wonder how much performance background you have, you know, to be able to do this. I mean, where what's your background when it comes to performing live music?
Well, I mean, I've done shows since I was 12 or 13 in my first band, but they told me the same things back then. I think there's just a lot of pent-up emotion that needs to be let out, you know, so I do it that way.
Let me ask you, I mean, even in the song we were just hearing, Judas Said to Be a Man, the first line is about home. Talk about how emotional you are with your songwriting, because that seems to be a resonating theme throughout your music, just about things like home, life, death, big, big issues for someone of your age.
All I try to do in writing a song is to try to connect with people in something. But at the same time, I feel that there's a therapeutic aspect to writing a song, and there's also just something you're trying to accomplish. Like, I think Lou Reed once said that, like, when they were doing the Velvet Underground or something, he wanted to make smart rock music. And to me, like, I wanted to write lyrics and make songs that were more intelligent on the end of things. I mean, popular music in itself is a very lowbrow art form, and to try and push it up to a middle brow or a higher brow kind of thing interests me a little bit.
Is this the kind of, I mean, this music, how different is it from the kind of music you were producing when you were younger, when you were 12 to 15 to 16 to 17? I mean, it seems like it's much more mature. Obviously, you're scaled back here. How have you evolved and matured as a young artist?
It just kind of happened one day. I think I read a lot, which helps. Interests, I really like David Lynch movies and reading, you know, Wittgenstein philosophy and Jack Kerouac beat books and stuff. So, I mean, that, I think, definitely enhances your vocabulary, for sure. These are just the topics of things, I guess, that's just, I don't know, my life has kind of formed my mind around those topics. They resemble my life to some extent.
Well, let's hear some more music. Live in studio, Trevor Sensor, singer-songwriter. His EP, Texas Girls and Jesus Christ, is out, and he's got a new single, Judas Said to Be a Man, which we just heard live, which will be released on May 27th on Jag Jaguar Records. What are we going to hear now?
The Reaper Man.
Into a little house nearly falling apart. In there sits a wicked man who tortured my simple heart. Would it take another step towards something that's so vile? He gets up and he looks at me. I show him my denial. Oh, here's the Reaper Man. He's looking after me. Oh, here's the Reaper Man, he's coming to take me. Da-da-dum. I have spent sleepless nights dreaming of the day that he'll come and take a step and a walk towards my way. But brittle bones and aching limbs is where I wanna be. Oh, when that wicked man comes for me. Oh, is the Reaper Man, he's looking after me. Oh, is the Reaper Man, he's coming to take me. La, la, la. Da-da-dum-dum. I believe in redemption from a brighter light. But I ain't going with him without one last fight. Oh, but that Reaper man, oh, he loves me so. And I can't hear his whispers as the cold wind blows. Oh, is the Reaper man, he's looking after me. And oh, is the Reaper man, he's coming to take me. Oh, is the Reaper man, he's looking after me. And oh, is that a Reaper man, he's coming to take me. La, la, la.
Singer-songwriter Trevor Sensor, the tune The Reaper Man. The EP is Texas Girls and Jesus Christ, and the single we heard earlier in the segment, Judas Said to Be a Man. He's going to be here at the Lincoln Hall on June 6th, opening up for the Staves, and much more. I mean, this is sort of the beginning of your career. You're young. How old are you?
22.
22 years old. I mean, you've lived a life, or 10, you're already a decade in music. But, I mean, do you see yourself living a life of a touring musician? Is this the career in which you have chosen?
Oh, I think it's chosen me. If anything, I'm just along for the ride, as they say. I just kind of go with all this has kind of happened by chance anyway, and I feel very uncomfortable with how it happened in the first place because it feels like I just got lucky. So I'm just trying to keep that luck going as long as I possibly can.
What's the end game for you? I mean, is it to make a living in music, to be able to get into pop music, as you mentioned, like push the boundaries a little bit?
I don't want to do another job. So, I mean, doing art is all I want to do. But in terms of, like, my goal for my art, I guess, is that if I could make one piece of music or a piece of art that is able to have the effect of, say, like, Purple Rain by Prince or something, that really connects with people in, like, the human condition, yeah, right, to be, like, quasi-philosophical about it, that'd be a good accomplishment.
Yeah, right. That's got to be the mountaintop for musicians, correct?
Yeah, I don't know if that transfers into record sales or not, you know, as the, you know, label and all the business people want, but that's my goal at least.
So. Well, we'll be looking for Trevor Sensor. He'll be on stage at the Lincoln Hall opening up for the Staves on June 6th. Also, his EP, which was just released in April, Texas Girls and Jesus Christ, is out. And the new single on Jag Jaguar Records, Judas Said to Be a Man, is released on May 27th. Trevor, thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thanks for having me.
It's just a character flaw. I got a character flaw. You never please a mom. It's just a character flaw.
That's right. It's Wednesday night. So you know what time it is, Download Nation. It's time for Character Flaws. This is, of course, the segment where we bring you the best sketch comedy, performance, improvisation, and characters the city has to offer. And it has plenty to offer tonight. Susan Messing, Rachel Mason, Sandy Marshall. Later in Character Flaws, we're going to hear from Ted Dinnerbansky of Dinnerbansky & Ross, the largest tax and audit accounting firm in the history of the world. Ted Dinnerbansky is the richest guy ever. So we're going to talk to him with a new segment we're calling the 1% Report. He's just going to update us on, well, what's going on with the 1%? You know, they have a newsletter that they send around. So we'll talk with Ted Dinnerbansky coming up later in Character Flaws. You know, I hate to do this, especially in the middle of a show. We just don't have enough time because it's 4 hours a night. It's always difficult. So we thought tonight, if you don't mind at home, that we would have a staff meeting, Download staff meeting. Just me, Pete, Rob, Esmeralda. Okay, so why don't we just kind of go over some of the things I have here. Number one, can we get security out in front of the studio because that guy is back? And he just keeps lifting up his shirt and pointing at me and then making a fist and then pointing at me and then pointing at his chest. Like, I'm not sure what he's saying. I'm not sure if he likes me or doesn't like me. Maybe just tell security. Number two, I wanted to make an announcement about Steve Gadlin. He does the frying pan on Friday nights. I just want to let everybody know that we made the decision that we are going to extend him for 5 years. Yeah, it's a 5-year deal for the frying pan. So he'll be giving new inventions and ideas for the next 5 years. So we got that too. Let's see what else. Okay, yeah. Do you have the gifts? We have to say goodbye to Brittany and Brittany, our interns. So I'm going to bring them in. Okay. Brittany, come on in.
Hi, which Brittany do you need? I'm Brittany, and she's Brittany.
I'm Brittany.
Hi, Brittany. Brittany, great to see you guys. I haven't seen you around that much lately, so I'm a little bit, I'm surprised that you're here this week, but that's fine.
Hi, Jackson. It's graduation time, so we've been very busy.
We're excited about graduation time.
That's what we wanted to talk about. It's been such a great year with you guys, and I know it is graduation time. And as you move on in your lives and you leave WGN and the download, we wanted to make sure that you had something to remember us by.
Aww.
So here you go. This is a download frisbee.
Wow.
It's also reversible, turns into a hacky sack.
We're going to give you back these presents. We don't mean to be present giver backers.
Okay.
But we have some special announcements for you.
I will keep my frisbee because it will look amazing on our desks here in this office.
Okay. We are going to go on the 5-year senior plan, and we are transferring from ASU to Phoenix Online U,
which is still in Arizona.
So we feel like we're at home, and we can continue our internship, which we greatly appreciate.
You are welcome.
That's great.
We knew you would be excited.
And
besides, I don't have room for my frisbee anyway because I put some booze on that desk to celebrate for all of us.
Okay, well, like I said, no booze at work. So
well, it's at work. It's just not in my
mouth.
Jethro,
we're celebrating.
Okay, well, you know what? I got to check, you know, because we may have given your internships away. There was a lot of really great candidates.
Oh, no, we sent them home.
We did. We met them. They were very nice.
Very
nice.
We
told them that it wasn't their fault.
We were
just really good interns.
Yeah. We just paid for their Uber and everything. Mm-hmm. Or is it a Lyft?
It had a pink mustache.
Yeah, that would be a Lyft. Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. I'm going to have to, we'll figure this out. If you are working, obviously you're working through the week. We're not necessarily working on Memorial Day. So I'd love it if you guys could maybe
Memorial
do something.
Memorial Day is one of our nation's most important holidays.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Brittany has perhaps saved my life.
It is important that every woman go and have a breast exam.
Brittany has checked my breasts several times, sometimes when I'm drinking to see if they're more cystic. Okay. Sometimes.
Memorial Day is so important.
No, it's not. It's not.
Even Grisabella sang about mammaries in cats.
Right. Mammaries. Oh,
It's not Memorial Day. It's Memorial Day, as in for soldiers who have died in the line of duty for the United States of America.
Don't belittle women's health issues.
Exactly. That is not.
Oh, I'm not. I would
you're
never
making
do
it
that.
All about men. Although men get breast cancer too, but not half as much as women do.
No, I'm just saying it's.
Men should still go and get memorial exams.
Unless they're cystic, in which case they should add an ultrasound.
Exactly. Thanks, Brittany.
Thank you, Brittany. I love you so much. I want you to live forever.
All right.
Look, it's very simple. You raise
okay,
your
put your
arm.
No. Put your shirt back down. Nope. Not here. That's not what we're going to do.
Don't you like
webcam.
Her bra? It's pretty.
All right. So Brittany and Brittany are back. It looks like they're going to be here through the summer. I don't know why I don't have the courage to end that.
Well, but we're very excited about summertime in Chicago because my Brittany is a boat magnet.
How many times I told you, don't go on boats. Don't do boats.
I get invited on boats, but it's during the winter and they're dry docked. And it's a little more scary, I would say, when I get invited
on a boat.
But Brittany, so many boats in so little time.
Sometimes I just jump from one boat to another.
She does. She's like a gazelle. Beautiful vision of Brittany.
You meet so many amazing people.
Well, I can't remember any of them, but you told me they were nice, and I have pictures.
You must be careful during boating season to wear a proper amount of SPF.
No, I've said this a million times, guys. The only problem I have with you guys being in the boating scene is it's a really, really tough scene. There's a lot of drinking and partying. And, you know, as the host of the download, I don't want to act like your parent, but I just want you to be careful. And I'd much rather you spend your time in a more constructive fashion.
My father owns a boat.
It's a fishing boat. I've caught a carp.
That sounds like the appropriate way to be on a boat. What you're talking about, Brittany, is the more inappropriate way.
Brittany has caught so many men in her net of joy.
Okay.
And I watch and take pictures.
that okay.
It's
well,
good to have a memory book, and I'm also going to start scrapbooking.
That's not what we meant by capturing your environment in a social media kind of way, but...
Jocelyn, I'd like to get to the root of your boat hatred. Did something happen to you on a boat when you were a child?
I think something did. He's scared of water.
No, I'm not.
Did a man who owns a boat tell you that you were a nerd?
It's...
Because you're not. You're like one of those cool nerds.
Are you crying?
I'm not. I just wanted to go on a boat and... They said, no, it's only ladies. You can't go, so...
Would you like to come with us this Memorial Day?
On a boat? I mean, I would love to go on a boat.
Oh, I'll take pictures.
Brittany and Brittany, they're back for the summer. I'm so happy. We'll be right back. It's just a character flaw. I got a character flaw. You'll never please a mom. It's a download here, and it's Character Flaws, the best of sketch, improv, and performance. You heard Brittany and Brittany also go by the name Susan Messing and Rachel Mason, two great improvisers here in Chicago and friends of the show. They've been on several times. You can see them with the boys at Second City on Friday nights, I think it is, and then Messing with a Friend. You can see them all over town. They're some of the best improvisers in town. Well, coming up now, you know, this is a new segment for us. This is the 1% Report. I'm excited about this because this is something that, you know, we've always wanted to be diverse in what we do here on the download. And we wanted to, you know, we do a lot of stuff about social justice, and we never really get a chance to talk about, you know, the 1%, the rich. And that's where we introduce our next guest here, Ted Dinnerbansky. Ted Dinnerbansky is one of the... He's from the founding family of Dinnerbansky and Ross, which is the largest tax and accounting firm in the country. It's actually over 500 years old. Dinnerbansky and Ross did the tax and accounting on the Mayflower. They taxed and then accounted for all of that stuff. And Ted Dinnerbansky comes from a long, long line of rich people. He's also an author. And, you know, since summer's right around the corner, that means it's time to break out the beach reading list. You know, and you want to read, you want to be diversified. You want to sort of have an eye towards the economy, maybe the upcoming presidential election. You know, maybe what's going to make you rich. You know, so that's when we turn to Ted Dinnerbansky. His new book is called No Risk: How to Get Rich and Stay That Way. He's also the author of See You at the Finish Line: How to Get Rich and Stay That Way, and then Offshore Accounts for Dummies, which is also his book. Ted Dinnerbansky joins us now. For, you know, the largest tax audit and accounting firm. They've got 900,000 employees worldwide. He's actually he's joining us from his midweek retreat at a Buddhist temple in Sri Lanka. Ted, are you there?
Yeah, Justin, thanks for having me. You know, in the time it took you to do that intro, I made $4 million, and I'm wearing a robe. Seriously, do the math.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Well, thank you. Just hit 4.5.
So, Ted, you're a maverick. You've always been a maverick of American business, a true hero to so many that are in the top 1%.
Thank you.
What are you doing at a Buddhist temple?
Oh, just chilling on a couch, burning time that I can write off on my taxes. My one observation, no email.
Okay, that's a good observation. Let's get to your book. We all know... You've advised folks like Ben Bernanke, the former Secretary of State Hank Paulson.
You
came up with the term bailout. That was you did that term. That's great.
Thank you.
Your book takes us through some pretty turbulent economic times, yet it's called No Risk. Why?
You know, Justin, it's a great question. You know, it's really for fellow members of the top 1%. It's a bit of an inside joke, really, more than anything. You know, the book's in three parts, and if there's a central theme, it's about investing in the future and protecting your grandchildren.
Wow, three parts for a book, like three separate books?
Yeah, that's right. You know, part one's about hedging, part two is about the myth of poverty, and part three is about making tough decisions. Things like what you should name your new science center at alma mater, or how to waste a year. There's also an appendix on how to host a full-scale gladiator fight in your own backyard, which is loaded with insights and stories on how to host a full-scale gladiator fight in your own backyard.
Okay, well, I know that being in the 1% keeps you busy. Ted, yeah. I got to ask you, how do you find time to write all these books?
Super swamped, but I try and make the time, you know. A lot of stuff going on the fly. A good man once said that good men are made by other good men. I think Jack Welch said that. But to your point and to your question, Justin, you know, the book's a function of a few recorded conversations with Alan Greenspan during our flights to Mali. I hired J.K. Rowling to type it out. We got some great notes from TLC's T-Boz and Chili. Two of three were able to give me
right.
some thoughts.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. That's great. What an eclectic group. Any insights or quotes from the book you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, you know, I'm really interested in Crabtree and Evelyn lately. Like their management structure, focused on offshore accounts and supply chains and the customer touch point seems almost it's like you're at home. But, you know, to your question, you know, quotes, I'm trying to think, you know, for these Occupy kids, you know, just to say that we're just like you. We have the same struggles. We just focus on different things, like whether or not to let Dick Durbin run for governor. He seems like a nice guy, you know, but the buttons on the collar bother me.
Right, right.
Those buttons on the collar.
It's always the buttons on the collar, right?
I don't trust the buttons on the collar. It's the small things like that. You see those, you know?
Yeah,
it's
you do.
Like Nixon sweating.
Ted Dinnervansky is one half of the global partner, Ted Dinnervansky and Ross. What's Skip Ross up to these days, Ted? We haven't heard much from Skip.
Skip's got a lot on the fly. He's been spending a lot of time on water skis for the past couple months. He's patented a new move where he's able to jump the wake twice. He's also officially cloned himself, so don't know if that's officially announced, but it did go through. The tests worked, and Skip's got a clone. There's two of them now. It's a legit second Skip. So
there you go. That's good. So breaking news here.
I don't know if it's official or not, but I don't know if you want to maybe cut that out of the final edit. But
well, it's live. So okay. Well, yeah. the book is called No Risk.
Maybe it won't be.
No. Okay. Well, the book's called No Risk, How to Get Rich and Stay That Way, from the author of other books like See You at the Finish Line, How to Stay Rich, and How to Get Rich and Stay That Way, and also the offshore accounts for dummies. Ted Dinnervansky of Dinnervansky and Ross, the oldest tax and accounting firm in the history of the world, 500-plus years, is on the line. Ted, thanks for taking some time out to talk about the 1%.
Justin, thanks so much. And just as a follow-up, you know, the wrap-up on the email, let me know. Just send me this thing with a debrief and, you know, give me any thoughts you have and if I should buy Twitter.
That's going to do it for the download tonight. Thanks to Sandy Marshall, also known as Ted Dinnervansky. Dinnervansky and Ross. The nation's oldest tax and accounting firm, 500-plus years. I love that. They did the tax and the accounting for the Mayflower. We'll be back next Wednesday with some more character flaws, sketch, improv, characters here from some of the best in the city of Chicago. So thanks for listening. Coming up tomorrow, we got a great show. Ray St. Ray is going to be here. He's the singing cab driver. If you're familiar with the singing cab driver, he's been on Wild Chicago. There's a new documentary that's being done about Ray's life and the idea that if you ever had the hail a taxi and you got in and Ray turns around, he says, "Hi, I'm Ray. Here's the deal. I will sing for you for a certain amount of money." That's essentially the bit. It's been well documented. Like, I think like it's a something that's very uniquely Chicago.
Oh yeah.
So we will talk with Ray tomorrow on the program. Also,
could we get like he and Ronnie Woo Woo in the same room?
I know, right? It's Ray's sort of become one of the whack pack of Chicago. Like, that's what I always loved about that Wild Chicago show. Speaking of Wild Chicago, John Davies, who was one of the producers and also was at the movies producer, is behind a new documentary, Heroes on Deck, which is about the planes that are at the bottom of Lake Michigan. This is really interesting. There was a training in World War II. There was sort of ad hoc training, very dangerous training for landing on aircraft carriers after Pearl Harbor. They couldn't do the training on the coast because they were afraid they would be bombed by Japan. So Lake Michigan along the coast here, just a little bit north of Chicago, was the place that they would sort of train pilots, and you'd have to have four landings and four takeoffs before you could get into the war. And it was almost like the reason that we were able to compete and win World War II was because of this training that was done off of the coast here in Lake Michigan. So we'll talk with John Davies about that documentary, which is going to be on TTW tomorrow night and on Sunday. Much, much more. We got. I'm excited. We got a big show tomorrow. We're going to do swap meet tomorrow. Real quick, I'm so excited about this. We talked about it on the show, and I haven't been able to pull the trigger, but we're going to do it. This is a simple. It's like antique roadshow for Chicago, cool Chicago stuff. The gentleman, I forgot his name, but the gentleman who called us up and had the Jane Byrne coloring book is going to come in the studio. And the idea being that we will essentially, he'll present what he has, some great Chicago artifacts, and we will take calls for people to match it. What would you trade for it? Got to be a cool Chicago artifact. So that's tomorrow at 10 o'clock. If you got stuff in your basement, you're like, I don't know really what to do. I've got this really cool thing. I get this thing from back when the first Mayor Daley was mayor. I got this great thing about when the Cubs in 84, you know, and I don't know what to do with it. This is a way for you to call up, let us know about it, and maybe trade for some other junk. I think it's a great segment. I can't wait to do it and try it. We'll do it tomorrow at 10 o'clock. All right, that's going to do it. Mark Carmson's in tonight. Yeah. Carmson, he's in for Patty Vasquez.